This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied. It's mine.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. Sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire. Produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire. Huh?
Or Oral. A U R A L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Hitch's collection there.
Osmonauts star in American Pie. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was that?
Liz Mark.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shock Master's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation. Let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opening.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. Back in the saddle, and Scott Criscola. We're finally kind of back to some sort of routine here on the Place to Be Podcast. I feel like over the last, pretty much since like early July, we've been all over the place with this schedule.
Absolutely. Good evening, JR. Pleasure as always. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 329 of the Place to Be Podcast. The reason is, JR, I feel like we just do so much now. We've got all different themes and different topics, and you know, it's been like so hectic and herky-jerky, but now we're heading into the fall, and football starts in a couple weeks, both college and pro, and we're getting into a groove now. We've got specialty shows that we're going to mention one of them this evening. It's finally, we're kind of in a nice foundation again. But tonight, definitely... I mean, I think it's safe to say, I mean, we've done how many vaults at this point?
A lot.
You know, 80, probably.
More.
I don't know, did they get over 100 by then? Yeah, I guess so. This one may come close to one of the best, because you and I usually get in a good groove when we have a fantastic show. And for those that haven't had a chance, that are new to the show, welcome. If you haven't listened to our WrestleMania 17 vault, that's one of our big-time wheelhouse shows. This one... in my opinion, after watching it again today, and I've watched the show many times, as have you, I think this show is also like that. So
yeah, and it's one when we did our ranking the WrestleManias on the Brad and Chad show back in April. It's one that we had ended up being our second best WrestleMania of all time. And
right.
Even that's with 30 having been in the books, I think it still holds up as number two. So we'll see. And I actually tried to make the argument, and sort of Chad a little bit, almost like devil's advocate kind of argument, that 19 could maybe be the best ever. So we'll see. We'll talk about it tonight, and then we can look at his legacy compared to WrestleMania 17. But it's one I've really been looking forward to talking about for
me too.
A few reasons.
So. Oh, yeah. Me too. Definitely. All right. I'm sure he's in the box.
Hey, what is going on here?
Well, at least you got the carpeting down. The cheese smells out. You know, AC and Zach and the gang are back this week, as most schools are. So, all right. Tonight, inside the big steel box that we call the Vintage Vault... It is the end of an era. It is the end of Attitude. That theme that they always use. All right. We didn't play the open because it's like 4 minutes and it's the usual, you know,
yeah,
memorable, you know, history-making stuff that we hear every March, April, when this pay-per-view starts. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, on episode 329 of the Place to Be podcast, we bring you one that I think a lot of people are looking forward to listening to, WrestleMania 19. Underrated? Overrated? I'd like to argue somebody who thinks it's overrated. Is it even underrated, though?
No, I think it's like, properly rated.
Yeah, I feel like now over the last... I think in the beginning, though, it was underrated.
Oh, I think for a long time, because 2003 had such a stank on it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until years later that people looked back and were kind of like, wow, this is really a great show. I mean, it's very top-heavy, but even the bottom half is still very strong. And it was fun. We group-watched this over the last week or so on a couple different nights. We had a few of the guys, Tim Cable and Brett Carlson.
Yes, I saw. Very nice.
And Danny Nunez, and I'm sure I'm missing someone in there, and I apologize. We had a really good time rewatching this and chatting as we went through it, which is, of course, what we do every week now at the Place to Be Podcast Live Chats Facebook page. Now, it's a private group, but you can easily be added by just asking one of us. So if you hit up me or Scott on either Facebook or email and you want to get involved, it's basically a running group chat where we have all different news throughout the day, and you could talk about anything in the world of wrestling or Place to Be. And every Tuesday and Sunday now, we do live watches. I'm sorry, Tuesday and Friday.
Tuesday and Friday, yeah.
So every Tuesday night, we start at 8. Friday, we start a little bit later, like around 9:30. And this past week, we actually started around 10, and we did In Your House Mind Games, which was a lot of fun. It was really cool to watch that with the guys, too. So we sit there, bullshit as we watch it. We all start at the same time. So I just wanted to throw that out there. If you're into that kind of thing and you want to join the live chats page, let us know, and we can add you over to the group. But yeah, Scott, so WrestleMania 19... to me, kind of the official end of the Attitude Era. We've talked about this many times. We've talked about it at 17. We talked about it with Kevin. We talked about it on our 2001 retrospectives. We've mentioned it time and time again that I feel it's just the... 17, to me, is the absolute peak of Attitude. You don't get much higher than that. And then I still feel like things were Attitude Light for a while, and we were coming down that crest over 2001 and 2. And to me, here is where we say goodbye. We say goodbye to a few of the guys that have been around for a while. It feels like a real changing of the guard, a passing of the torch at the main event. You look at up and down the card, the style, the look, the attitude, and by our next month, so much has changed as well. So to me, this is where we really put that era, the wars, the attitude era, the resurgence era. That's all put to bed in my eyes here. This is where we start kind of the modern run in 2003. So
you could say... We've said that WrestleMania 17 is the Attitude Era's version of WrestleMania 3. So is this the Attitude Era's version of WrestleMania 6?
Yeah, I think
in terms of the end of an era, you know?
Do you consider 6 or 7 more the end of that era?
Yeah, you could say 7, I guess. I guess you could say 7, yeah.
I mean, if you really want to get crazy, I call 8 the end of the era, because that's where Hogan leaves. And to me, the end of 92 looks almost like, oh, you know, it's a radical shift.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of the same guys from... See, I think of like 5 is almost more the end of the original rock and wrestling era. And then we have like a bridge few years to 8. That's why I always looked at that. Like the mega powers explode... Hogan, kind of Savage. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the guys come in around early 89 that would kind of make up the next generation of wrestlers.
Right.
But it's a discussion for another day. But
yes, of course.
That might be a fun roundtable, actually. We've been kind of thinking of new roundtable ideas. How about eras, wrestling eras? How can we like define periods and compartments?
And what were the highlights of them, lowlights? Yeah. What was good about them, bad? Ah, that's a good idea. I like that idea. I'll have to pick the right guys for that table.
Yeah.
All right. March 30th. 2003. And if you think that date's early, wait till we get to the a year from now when they set the record for earliest Mania. Live from Safeco Field in Seattle, Washington. Our first venture, JR, into the Evergreen State.
Good choice to start with.
Yes, I think so. And this will not be the last time in 2003, PIC, that we will be debuting a new state. We debut another one, ironically, for the other big show of 2003 later on in the summer. Your attendance, a Safeco Field record, 54,097. Oh, before I continue, give us the history, obviously, brand new building for us, of Safeco.
Yes, it is, like you said, Safeco Field where the Mariners play. It opened fairly recently, 1997. They broke ground, opened July 15th, 1999, $517 million. Pretty much just the Mariners, the only tenant there. So main contractors, the Erection Company. It's also... what Triple H calls you, I believe. So, It's kind of like the Electric Company cartoon.
I love that show.
1, 2, 3 inches.
Zoom, zoom, zoom. I said, no.
So that's it for Safeco.
Oh, yep, that's it. There's only one tenant, and that is, of course, the Mariners. Yeah. So they started mid-season? Like they left the Kingdom mid-90s. Really? I don't remember that.
Well, were they playing somewhere else, maybe?
Where else would they play? Is there another ballpark? I don't know. That's weird. They play in Tacoma or something?
Yeah, the first game was officially played July 15th, 99 against the Padres.
Oh, so they started mid-season? Wow, that's weird. I thought only the Sky Dome would ever did. Oh, no, I think Camden Yards opened opening day. I guess Safeco and the Sky Dome, although if anybody else has any other ones, let us know. Pretty sure those are the only like major ballparks that opened mid-season, because I think Sky Dome opened mid-89, mm-hmm. like in June or something.
Well, it looks like this was the all-time attendance record, still is, for Safeco, 54,097.
Yeah, I can't see. I mean, well, obviously the floor seats add to that. Like a Mariner sellout wouldn't even come close to that. I'm sure they had plenty of them in, you know, 2000, 2001 when they were on their really good run. Okay, your buy rate, typical Mania buy rate, pretty awesome, 1.08. Your announcers out in the bowels in the outfield for Raw, good old JR Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler. Quick trivia, JR. JR. Quick trivia, JR, about JR. What does he wear every WrestleMania?
A toga.
No. No, only the first WrestleMania. No, according to Lawler, he wears the John Wayne cufflinks every WrestleMania. And at ringside, your SmackDown announcers. And this is their coming out. I mean, they've had a good run.
Yeah.
And I know they had a couple. I don't think they had any matches at 18. But this is really the coming out party for Michael Cole and Taz.
Yeah. Yep.
In terms of getting the shine that they deserve. And obviously they do, since they get the main event. So.
And cashing in on it. They do a great job.
Oh, they do a fantastic job. Because Lawler has his low points, and I think JR wanted to punch him in the face a few times.
All right. The Sutton notes here.
Yes, one of the Sutton notes. I'm sure there's a boatload.
Yes, WrestleMania sponsored by Snickers this time around. Song was Crack Addict by a band we'll hear many times throughout the night. That is yes. Limp Bizkit. Tagline, Dare to Dream. Championship roll call. Our WWE champion still Kurt Angle. Our world champion still the Erection Company, Triple H.
Woo!
Tag team champions Lance Storm and Chief Morley, who made himself Storm's partner on the March 24th Raw when William Regal was diagnosed with an illness and he had to take some time off. So Morley stepped in to take over as half of the tag team champions. Our WWE tag team champions still Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin. Cruiserweight still Matt Hardy. Women still Victoria. So no title changes heading into Mania here. Far cry from like the Attitude days of 99, yeah. 2000, a million title changes leading in. Any roster changes here? Mainly it's just The Rock from SmackDown to Raw. We had two TV returns. Rhino returned to the 227 SmackDown. We'll get to him in a minute. And Eric Angle, the brother of Kurt, has returned to TV. From
your boy.
Let's see here. Left the promotion. Deborah, of course, the wife of Stone Cold Steve Austin, is now gone. Well, former wife. Soon to be ex-wife.
Yeah,
and our good friend Kevin Kelly would be gone shortly after the show. So we'll talk to Kevin soon about the early 03. TV by the numbers. Raw passed 513 episodes. SmackDown 189. Velocity 45. Heat 240. We are now past 38 TNA weekly pay-per-views. It was announced on the 227 SmackDown. Tori Wilson would be posing for Playboy in May. It would go on to sell over a million copies.
Mm-hmm.
Standard Heat, Tommy Dreamer defeated, and Tommy Dreamer Maven defeated 3 Minute Warning. Test defeated Rico. Rodney Mack defeated Spike Dudley. And Jazz was victorious over Jacqueline. And of course, our Heat we'll talk to in a minute. We had a few celebrities in the house. Scott Ashanti sang the opening national anthem. Limp Bizkit, Katanya Baker, Tanya Bollinger were there. Those were the Miller Lite cat fight girls that we'll get to.
Yes.
Steven also gives me all the WrestleMania records for everyone involved. So if I remember for each match, we'll duck back over.
Okay. And to confirm that, the divorce between Austin and Deborah was official on February 5th.
Okay.
2003. So they were divorced by then, by Mania. So.
Okay. All right. So awesome looking stadium, I thought here, Scott.
Oh, gorgeous.
Phenomenal. Stacked card. And they mention a couple times on commentary that a WrestleMania movie is being filmed.
Yes.
WrestleMania the movie. And that would air a year later. Right? Was it aired before then? I know it's on the WrestleMania 20 DVD. Did it air?
It is on the 20 DVD. Was it air on TV? I want to say it did.
It may have, actually.
Yeah, I want to say it did. Like, right before 20. I don't think it aired in 03 at all. I think it might have aired, like... Because remember the top 10 Mania matches of all time that's also on the 20 DVD that Flair hosted right before WrestleMania 20? I have a feeling both of those aired around the same time, I think. I'll have to look into that. But I have a feeling it did air... it did air on regular TV. I have a feeling. I don't think it. I don't think it was just on the DVD. Of course, you know, JR and Lawler would mention it often.
I wish they showed that on the network. That thing was awesome. If you remember, Jesse Ventura returned to he narrated that.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, they should put it on there. Maybe next year when they get into more WrestleMania, maybe they figure out what the hell's going on. Damn network. Then maybe we'll get more of that. But because I don't think the WrestleMania 20 DVD is fairly available. Well, the 3-disc.
Probably not, yeah.
The 2-disc is probably, but the 3-disc, I bet you, is pretty rare.
Yeah, all I right. think it was pretty jacked up. So that airs a year later. And like you said, they talk about it throughout the night. They mention it. So it was a good one for them to be involved in, as we'll get to.
Yes. All right. Is that all the Sutton Files? Yes. Yep. We'll go through the records as we go. How are we on Heat?
Well, I mentioned the international version. We have one match on the pay-per-view version.
That's gotta be Kane!
Oof. Would you call this a demotion?
Yeah. Our tag team championship on Heat. Willie the Worker was not happy, Scott. Do you remember him?
Yes.
Willie the Worker was, was it Insider that had him? It was supposedly someone that worked for WWE, a wrestler, would write these columns ripping shit apart. And one of the things they were most bitter about was this match being on Heat, so many were led to believe it was Rob Van Dam. I don't know if he was ever outed or not, but...
Yeah, that goes back a couple of years, too, that they talked about that.
Good old Willie the Worker. That was in 2003, I think it was happening.
Yeah, Willie the Worker. Yeah, I'm going to look that up and see if I see that anywhere.
So, the word on the street was that RVD, Kane, and these guys were not very happy being relegated to Heat for a tag title match. This was not announced for Heat. This was supposed to be on the card, and then they just put it on Heat. So after the shenanigans that occurred with the Dudleys being stripped of the titles, Chief Morley. Yes.
I'm sorry, I have a side note. As I type Willie the Worker into Wikipedia, two things on the list are Willie Wiener and a list of Germans who resisted Nazism. So.
Okay, what about Wee Willie Wilkie?
All right.
Chief Morley officially suspended the Dudleys from Raw. They would receive various opportunities to earn their jobs back, but each time they failed. Finally, in the 3/17 Raw, they returned and helped Morley and Storm assault RVD and Kane, and they announced they had turned to the dark side to win their jobs back and feed their families. They would essentially become henchmen for the Chief. On the March 24th Raw, Chief Morley came out to announce that William Regal was too ill to continue defending the tag team titles. They were vacated, and Morley named himself as Regal's, to replace Regal and awarded himself and Storm the titles. He then made a number one contenders match with the winning team getting a title shot at Mania. The Dudleys lost to RVD and Kane, and the latter team advanced on. The Dudleys would then aid their boss during this match to continue the storyline. In February, William Regal became gravely ill and was forced to the sidelines. It was first thought Regal had contracted a parasite on an international tour. It was eventually determined that he was suffering from a very serious heart problem, likely stemming from years of his drug abuse. Regal would be sidelined for the rest of 2003. And this thing was very serious. If you ever read his book, he talks about how close to death he was on a couple occasions in 2003. So just when this guy ever gets going, I feel like something always completely knocks him off track. Chief Morley, the man better known as Val Venus. We talked about that before. He returned under the name Sean Morley in the fall as Bischoff's right-hand man. So what did you think of the Dudleys angle, Scott?
It was all right, I guess. I think it was a little jumbled. I mean, the tag division... As we see, as we talk about on this show and throughout 2003, the tag division on SmackDown is tremendous, and I feel like the tag division on Raw got a little jumbled. I think turning the Dudleys heel face got a little stale after a while.
Well, so they don't really turn heel here, right? They're more like captive faces.
Yeah, they're like exactly. They're like. Yeah, they're like against their will kind of thing. Like they need to do things. Yeah.
So it's not really heel. I mean, at least it was something. Oh, well, yeah. Just the usual.
Yeah.
And it made Morley look like a dick.
It did. And I think you probably could have fit this on the card if you.
Oh, yeah. If you knock out the concerts or the. There's you know, it's Mania. There's always shit you can lop off.
There's a boatload of fluff on here.
And this goes. I don't have the time here, but it couldn't have been very long. 5 minutes, maybe. 7 minutes. So, yeah, I think they could have found 7 minutes on the proper card for it. But you know what? Sometimes you don't want to shove it in, and then they get a rush. So maybe they felt better. I mean, if you're committed to the concerts, you're committed to the concerts. So you don't want to shoehorn this in, and then you're going to rush other stuff. So as it is, I think there are a couple of matches on the card that could have went longer that don't. So I would say unless you're going to chop out one of the performances, then it's probably fine here. So Storm and Morley retain over Kane and RVD when the Dudleys interfere. Storm gets the pin. Did you think Morley was a good substitute for Regal?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, he fit in the whole storyline with the hierarchy of Raw with Bischoff, and right. and I'm glad. The one thing I will say, I'm glad Storm is still in the mix. He's a guy that everybody really likes, and you didn't want to see him get hosed.
Right. Sad he doesn't get the Mania.
No, he doesn't. I don't think he ever will, unless he's at 20.
I don't think he is.
Unless he's on one of those teams. I mean, there's two multi-tag matches at 20, which we'll get to.
I think he's done after this.
Yeah, he might be done after this. On a side note, before we continue, you mentioned Willie the Worker. This is a real thing, not the Nazis that I talked about a minute ago. A guy mentions on a thread that I just found from back then, he goes, he gave clues out on his original column. He was not on the card at Mania, not even for a run-in, and doesn't appear to consider the Heat match part of Mania, but was backstage. So he, according to that clue, he's in this match. He's been with the company many years, so you could rule RVD out. He'd only been there like a year and a half. He claims that more of his merchandise was sold at WrestleMania than Albert. So a lot of people thought that it was one of the Dudleys, Test, Rikishi, or Jeff Hardy. Now, it could have been Jeff Hardy because he was already... right. Was he gone by then, or did he leave by April? Would we mention it? No Way Out. I think he was gone by now, right? Or had he been let go in April or May? Maybe it was by May.
I think
May.
It was April. So, I think it said April he was let go.
Okay, so he may still, but I couldn't see him being this covert. I could see it being one of the Dudleys, to be honest with you. Bubba Ray could be that bit of a douchebag. I don't know. I always wondered that myself. I know a lot of people always thought it was RVD. I never thought it was RVD. Bubba Ray seems like a guy that's just pissed off enough to... because by this point, the Dudleys did seem like they were getting dicked around a lot. You know, obviously they don't stick around that much longer. So, all right, let's dive into the main... do we have anything else?
The only other thing on Heat was John Cena came out and did a freestyle rap. If you remember, he had actually invited Fabulous and Jay-Z to appear. They did not.
Yes.
And I think Fabulous was supposed to show up.
I think it was Fabulous.
And apparently, or there was some miscommunication. I don't know. It was something screwy like that.
Was it his dad, Johnny Fabulous?
Johnny Fabs. So Cena cut a freestyle on two cutouts of Jay-Z and Fabulous. So just to kind of keep him in the mix.
Remember what jersey he had on? What jersey did he have on? I don't think it was a Mariners. He was still a heel, so it wasn't a Mariners throwback. I can't remember. It wasn't on the. They didn't put it on the network cut of the network file of 19, which I thought was kind of odd. Figured they'd throw that on there as a addendum. That was weird. I didn't think they. Oh, anyway. All right, let's dive in. We go to the opener, and our first title match of the evening. We've got one, two. I think we have five title matches tonight. I think. One, two, three. I think five. This is for the Cruiserweight Championship. Your champion, JR, your boy, the Sensei of Mattitude, Matt Hardy, who won it at No Way Out over Fleas Kidman, taking on the number one contender for the Cruiserweight title. It was a matter of time before he'd settle into this division, and that was, of course, Rey Mysterio. What are their Mania records? Obviously, one of them is barely anything.
Rey Mysterio, 0-1. So actually, this counts this, I guess. This is so maybe we'll do them after the matches. And Matt Hardy, 1-3.
Okay.
After this.
Okay.
And Mysterio had earned this title match, defeated Tajiri and Jamie Noble on the 3-6 SmackDown. So pretty pretty basic here. And I think this is a very good choice for an opener, pretty much a no brainer.
Yeah, very much so.
And it starts the tradition of Rey wearing superhero costumes at every WrestleMania. He starts here with Daredevil.
Yep.
Now, was that out at the time? Was that a movie at the time, or was it just based on the comic?
Well, a movie had come out with Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner, and of course that's Baldo. I think they got married from that movie, right? Are they the two that are married to each other? Yeah. And that splits off, and then she did that dreadful Elektra. Let me see when that came out, Daredevil.
So Rey gets off to a fast start, jumps Matt Hardy off the bell. Taz keeps pushing the Matt Hardy gimmick like we talked about last month. Crisp pace and action, very fluid. They take advantage of every minute they have here. Shannon Moore gets involved. He trips up Rey to give Hardy control. We get a good Rey false finish, and Shannon gets involved once again. And then Hardy hooks the ropes to steal the win. And that actually shocked me at the time. I thought Rey was going to take the belt here. Hardy is a great Cruiserweight champion. I was glad to see the ring continue. A very good opener. I think it could have used a few more minutes though here, Scott. It only goes 5:39. And I know on cards like this, it's tough, but even like three more minutes, it felt like it ended just when it was really starting to get cooking.
I agree. By the way, Daredevil came out on Valentine's Day, 2003, so it was fairly recent. So it fit perfectly. A couple things here. Number one, Rey, I remember there being a little, I don't want to say controversy, but it was some speculation. Rey's mask was like, you could see his face pretty clearly. It was like a half mask. It wasn't even like one of his normal masks.
Yeah.
It's like almost his whole jaw and his mouth and his nose were fairly visible, more than a usual mask. So maybe that was because that's the only way they can make the Daredevil with the little ears or whatever. But it was cool. Had that, you know, same color as actually Ben Affleck's. Number two, yeah, I mean, this should have got at least another 5 minutes. And sadly, I think this is where we find – I think this is definitely where the Attitude Era, although they go back to it in the, you know, late 2000s, early 2010s of wasting time with, you know, nonsense musical acts. They go through a stretch where they get rid of them, and then they bring them back by –
Well, I would argue it's not even the music act on this show as much as the catfight stuff we'll see later.
Oh, that was worse. I agree.
To me, that's way worse.
Yeah. That was a good, what, 8 minutes probably that they could have we could have done without. All we had to see was, you know, we wanted to see.
And
then
if you factor in the backstage stuff, and I don't know, it just to me that was more of the time suck than the actual music.
The
I mean, the music was shitty too. But don't get me wrong. But to me, if you're arguing true wastes, it's that.
Yeah, and they were also fucking hot, and it was just all we got to see was Coach get mooned. All right, I graded this match very well, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Probably because it was a tease. I'm trying to remember if these two face each other again later on in the year.
I think
Cruiserweight title is. Yeah, Cruiserweight title is. I mean, this is one of the take advantage of spots on the SmackDown show and on the car on the pay-per-views because they got such a rich division of guys. Yeah, I was definitely bummed. Crowd was hot. Cole and Taz were in a groove. You could see that they were about to have a good night. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm gonna mention Cole and Taz a lot tonight because they were in such a groove. They knew the for one. I don't know what has happened 11 years later. Probably because there's just too much crap to pimp in this company. But I felt like Cole was so locked into the storylines and he was giving really informative information. And now he just doesn't do that anymore.
No.
But here and Taz is just freaking hilarious. You know, he talks about the banana juice again. Because that was the whole, you know, BJ's. That was the whole big joke at No Way Out, and they kind of kept that joke going on this show. Would Matt Hardy get in? I mean, was this Matt Hardy's biggest spot of his career to this point?
No. I mean, I think some of the tag matches are bigger than this. I mean, some of those tag matches are positioned as semi-mains. So
right, that's true.
His biggest singles moment, but
yeah, maybe not of his career. Specific, yeah. But he's been a great heel. Were you shocked he won?
Yes.
I was.
Yep, very
I
shocked. I thought Ray was definitely going to take the title here.
Yeah.
But I was kind of glad they didn't because it's such a full card and 5 minutes. It's you don't want to blow Ray's win on that, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I am too. We'll talk about more of these guys throughout 2003. They get in better matches. And I mean, again, I love this match, but I just, again, it's 5:39. It should have been maybe 9:39 or even 10:39.
Yep.
But does not happen. So, all right. So, after the match, their WrestleMania records are
0-1 and 1-3.
There you go. Okay. Nice and easy. Okay. I believe in between here is when we see the Catfight Girls for the first time. I think they come out of the limo, right? I think in between. Because pretty much every. We don't get match to match at all on this card.
Right.
There's always something in between.
Yeah. They argue, and Hulk Hogan.
It's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
It's like Hulk Hogan. Hulk, that's a later segment, but yeah, they talk about it. They do talk about that eventually. So, all right. Next up, a forgotten, there's not many WrestleMania matches from here on out that you could, well, there's a couple, but, there honestly aren't many that you can consider forgotten Undertaker Mania matches, but this one is certainly one of them. Taker was supposed to tag team with the mysterious Nathan Jones to take on what I thought was a pretty badass heel team, JR. I was watching it today, and I'm like, this is a PIC and I team right here. Big Show and Albert, just two big, nasty heel hosses. I was a big Albert guy in the stretch. I don't know, I liked his role here. And he's I would say it's high profile, but when you're in a Taker match at Mania, you're paid attention to. But, of course, we'll talk about what happened, who he is, and how we got to this point.
Okay, so Nathan Jones was the newest big man that Vince McMahon signed away off the independent circuit. He was from Australia. Had spent 7 years in a maximum security prison due to committing a series of armed robberies. And Scott, figure out that timeline. This guy could have been Nails. He was one of Australia's most wanted prior to his arrest. While in prison, Jones was introduced to weightlifting. Upon his release, he started competing in strongman competitions throughout his homeland. After dabbling in MMA, Jones gave wrestling a shot. In 2001, he hooked up with the WWA, made a decent impression, won the WWA Heavyweight Championship on April 7th, 2002, but lost to Scott Steiner a week later. Jones hooked up with WWE shortly afterwards and was brought onto SmackDown as a protege of The Undertaker after a series of intriguing vignettes. He was scheduled to team with Taker here, but WWE officials got cold feet due to his lack of experience and were afraid he wasn't ready for live pay-per-view, so he's pulled from the match via a pre-match beatdown and given a quick run-in instead that we'll mention in a minute, so this becomes a handicap match. On 227, A-Train and Big Show attacked Undertaker, but he was saved by his new protege, Nathan Jones. A week later, we saw Taker sparring with Jones, training him for an in-ring career. Over the next 2 weeks, Taker kept guiding Jones and prepping him for the WrestleMania showdown. Finally, the night of Mania, cameras cut backstage to see Jones laid out and revealed that Undertaker would be forced to go it alone. And there was a lot of speculation at the time, Scott, that Taker's streak may end to put A-Train over. The thinking was a handicap loss wouldn't really hurt Taker, and luckily, of course, they did not go that route.
Thank God.
And finally, Limp Bizkit performs Rollin' here live.
Yeah, sings half the lyrics. He's like, Rollin', Rollin', and then he doesn't sing for like 20 seconds. They fucking mailed those two songs in pretty easily.
Jones was trained by Mike Bell and Tom Howard, 0-1 in MMA. Mm-hmm. And starred in Police Story 4 for Strike and Doom Runners.
So. Very interesting. More fun. Yeah, I was big on Albert at this point. I loved his spot.
What would you have done, though, if he beat Taker at the time? Put yourself, not nowadays, put yourself in the time. Mm-hmm. What would you have thought?
That he'd be pushed up the card and maybe be an opponent for you know, Brock or whoever the WWE champion was? You'd have to. You don't have him beat Taker at Mania and then just kind of let him sloth through the mid-card.
Right.
You got to give him a spot. I would have expected him to be a number one contender. You know, if Angle was hurt, well, I mean, we'll get to a lot of those details later on.
How big of a gaffe would that have been, though?
Oh, it would have been stupid. But that would have had to have been their plan.
Right.
If they did plan to do it, then they would have had to have given him title shots and maybe even won it, which would have been redonkulous, but he was good in this role, this, you know, good mid-card heel with Big Show. They were kind of a bullying Haas tag team, but beating them was Albert could have if you're gonna have at that point in the streak have somebody beat Taker at Mania, it's got to be somebody that you think has real long-term potential. At that point, if anybody really thought
you think
that
so,
Albert
though? Was
had
a streak,
potential,
I mean, was a streak that big of a deal yet that Albert needed to cash in that badly?
No, that's my point. I think it was just Taker. Taker was Taker. I think the streak itself, the number,
right,
means nothing for at least till we get to like 15 or 16. At this point, I think just beating Taker in general.
Okay,
and the number. I mean, Cole mentions it when he's coming down the ramp, when he's going down the aisle. But after that, they really don't mention it again.
Right.
And it doesn't get harped on at least till probably 23. It's probably the first time that the streak becomes something. Because it's the first time he gets a title match. And whatever. We'll get there. But I think Albert, if you're going to do something like that, regardless of the record, if you're going to have Taker lose and put over this guy, then you got to do something to him.
Yeah.
You got to put him in the main events, give him title matches with whoever the WWE champion is at the end of the show and throughout the spring and summer of 2003. Particularly if there's guys that are injured and maybe going off camera for a while. I mean,
okay.
you got to really cash this guy in. What?
Okay. Yeah. All right. I think we got it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So. I thought the entrance was cool for Limp Bizkit, but I don't get why they had to play like, the whole freaking song first before Taker comes out.
Yeah, he barely sings it. He sings like half of it, Rollin', Rollin', and then he just stops, even though it's supposed to be like five more Rollins. What you want to do now? And then no more singing. It was a mess.
And Taker comes out the American flag on his bike. Of course,
yes.
The Iraqi war had just started like a couple weeks before this. So,
yep.
Americana fever pitch at this point.
And Cole mentions that Taker's nephew is there.
Okay. Well, there you go.
In Afghanistan, he mentions that. So obviously, couldn't mention that if Taker was in his old character. That was the only benefit. And we'll talk more about this a year from now, because I think there are some pros to the American Badass era.
Sure.
So a lot of people may not want to
talk about
it. I
think it was a necessary break either way.
Yeah, but at least you got to go different directions with Taker. And you could mention things like, you know, that his nephew was in Afghanistan at this point, or Iraq or whatever, Saudi Arabia, that region. So the match, I mean, it's a handicap match. There's really nothing you could really, I mean, what'd you think of it? I mean, there's only so much you could go with it, you know?
Well, Sho and Albert, I thought they were pretty cool hosts. I actually liked this challenge for Taker.
Yeah,
Taker,
I agree.
Taker attacks immediately. Cole notes 10-0 pretty early on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And Sho out of the jeans, back into his tights now. Americana, yes. As we mentioned, kind of seeping in. Crowd is really pumped for Taker. A-Train gets a nice derailleur. Taker is now trying to really implement that submission style that we mentioned back in February. Slips in a Fujiwara and cross arm breaker as counter holds. The numbers advantage, though, they overpower Taker. All three men worked really hard. I didn't see any slow spots. Taker and Big Sho picked up right from No Way Out. Big Sho and Albert worked the back. They continued to use the number game. Taker and Albert flub a DDT a bit, but doesn't derail the match at all. No pun intended. They have a nice bicycle kick into a choke slam combo. Jones shows up, helps Taker, and Taker uses the assist to pin 8-Train with a stiff tombstone. And it was a fine match. I thought it had a lot of energy, a hot crowd. I thought they were fine not beating Sho again. Let Train take the fall here. It's not going to hurt him too much. And this is an underrated match to me. It's one of my kind of hidden WrestleMania mid-level matches that I enjoy. And not the scourge or the black mark on Taker's streak that you may assume it is.
Yeah. No, not at all. But I agree with you that Taker's in like full bore MMA mode, pulling all these arm bars and submissions out. And you could definitely tell he was adjusting his work rate and his move set because he's in that UFC mode, which is fine with me. It was nice to see kind of a change of pace for him. I mean, when Nathan Jones was in for those couple minutes, I mean, his kicks didn't look awful. I mean, they weren't like Kevin, they weren't like Diesel 1995 kicks where he's missing guys by 8 inches. I mean, they looked pretty, do you think that they were a little... Do you think being skittish was right? Do you think he should have got a shot here? I mean, it was a tag match.
It's a tough spot to put him in, though. Mania live. That would have been his first match. I don't think he wrestled on TV at all. So, I get it. Do you think they should have done... Well, I mean, the handicap match is fine. I actually like the match. I wouldn't change anything about it. I think
I liked it, too. I'm just saying... Do you think they were over-skittish? Again, the moments... he does the spin kick to Big Sho on the ramp, and then he boots Albert in the face in the ring that sets up the tombstone. I thought they looked fine. They look pretty smooth. I mean, again, they didn't look, Diesel 95 where, he missed Albert's head by...
It's hard to tell, whatever. I mean, he didn't work a long match. He wasn't winded or tired. He just came out, walked the aisle, and kicked him. So it's hard to really say how he would have done. It's a tag match. You can't totally protect him. What are you going to have him be Andre WrestleMania 6 and just completely stand on the apron the whole time?
I mean, I know, yeah, you couldn't do that.
He would have had to wrestle at some point. I'm fine with it. I think the match turned out fine.
I do, too.
It's a weird one, but I like it. It's entertaining enough, so.
Yeah, it is. And, I love the team of Big Sho. And I think, I know you mentioned about the jeans. I think he was out of them at No Way Out, too.
Was he? Yeah, I guess so. You might be.
Yeah, right. I think he was in the singlet by No Way Out. Might even have been out of the... No, he was in the jeans at the Rumble. It was I think he was in the singlet at No Way Out. All right, so we obviously know Taker is now 10-0. Mm-hmm. Who are the rest of the records?
We have... I'm glad you're remembering. Big Sho now 0-4. Taker's actually 11-0 now, Scotty.
Oh, 11-0
heading in. And A-Train 1-1 in Mania. So.
Okay.
We go backstage and Miller like girls visit with Tori and Stacy, and they talk about testicles and Playboy. One of the most awkward WrestleMania segments you'll ever see.
Yes. Yeah, acting was poor.
I like your testicles, sort of the hell they said.
Yeah, I'm so impressed with your testicles. But boy, were they in the prime of their hot streak, though. Tori and Stacy, oh, they were looking good that night. And the Catfight girls were always look good.
What
happened to them, but...
Yeah, they definitely did. And it was. I mean, they should have kept it to this. Like, we didn't need what we got later.
We could have had them meet
backstage and
we
talked about Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, H-O-L-G-A-N, Hogan. All right. Next up, we have our second title match of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
We have our women's championship in a triple threat. Your champion.
Now customary triple threat Mania women's match.
Yes. Second straight year. Your champion.
Wasn't that the third? Wasn't that one at 17? Oh, no, that was China Ivory. Yeah, second straight, right?
Yeah, second straight. But we do get into a run where, I know at least on multiple pay-per-views, I know 20 it's back to singles. But anyway... your champion, still Victoria, after the awesome hardcore match at the Garden back at Survivor Series. Taking on the always number one contender, Trish Stratus, who for the first time, I think, JR, really got like a star's entrance. I mean, she got a good pop. She got to shoot the little confetti cannons or whatever. She definitely finally, I think this is right. the moment. I mean, she's looked okay to this point, obviously, but I think this is her first real mania moment where she mm-hmm. really looks like a bona fide star. And the third one is Jazz, who I forgot how much I liked her entrance theme. With that, boom, boom. That was kind of pretty cool. I always liked her theme. How do we get here? How did we get three in this match?
Trish and Jazz had a match on the 310 Raw to determine who would face Victoria at WrestleMania. Victoria came in, clocked them both with the belt. Match ended at a WQ, so they made it a triple threat. Seen it a million times.
Simple and to the point.
Good to see Trish back. She's kind of been on the back burner since late 02. We haven't really had much women's action here in 03. Super hot, super over. Jazz back from her injury. Victoria's still a great champion, like you mentioned. Now she's joined by Stevie Richards here. Jazz grinds Trish early. We get some brawling in and out of the ring by all three. And interesting to see the two heels here. Good chance to build heat for Trish. Victoria and Jazz work together right. like two supervillains joining forces to kind of, uneasy yeah. about it, but they work together to eradicate Trish. Great character stuff from Victoria screaming about how much she hates Trish as she beats on her. Nice Michinoku driver by Jazz on Trish. Trish has good fire in her comebacks. Fighting off both of them. Good flurry of teases as Trish tries to sneak in pins during small windows. Stevie saves Trish in a Jazz submission to keep the match alive for Victoria. I thought some pretty good transitions here. All three got some shine. Jazz gets a great chicken wing slam on Trish. She's working hard to earn respect. She wipes out Stevie, hits a stiff chick kick on Jazz and gets the win. And a nice makeup for the WrestleMania 18 loss. I thought it was a very good women's match. And I thought it was great to put Trish back on top of the division. And I'm sorry, she actually pinned Victoria, not Jazz.
Yeah, she pinned Victoria.
Were you surprised they didn't have her pin Jazz?
Yes, because, typical, mania, end of something. Although she never really got her pin back from Victoria, so I'm not totally surprised. She didn't, she's getting back from losing at Survivor Series. Mm-hmm. They really worked hard in this match. I agree with you 100%. They really busted their asses here. That's the one thing I like about Jazz and Victoria. They're pretty, but they're not Tori, Trish. Stacy level. So I feel like they're more comfortable taking advantage of, bigger spots. I mean, like there was a couple spots Victoria's face hit the steps or hit the apron. And it makes the matches a little more meat, a little more teeth. And I think I think that's what makes when she's in the ring, it makes the matches better. And Jazz is just good. So having both of them at the ring at the same time just makes Trish look better.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a fine match. I thought the flow was good. This was JR and Cole's first match, and of course, a great line by Cole here. Not Cole, I'm sorry. JR. He goes, he's talking about Trish, and I don't know if everybody, I'm sure everybody kind of got the gag, but JR goes, I thought you were over blondes. but he's like, what, you don't like Jazz because she's not good looking? Yeah, well, JR, what are you going to say, Cole, Lawler, she's ugly? I mean, Lawler was definitely not on this night. JR really had to kind of carry him for a lot of the show because he really didn't know what the hell he was talking about half the time. Yeah! You hired him back. It's your problem. It was very well done, the match. And again, Trish, I think, got her mojo and in her first real big mania moment. Yes, a year earlier, she was, in her backyard and, she had the Canadian flag tights. But here, I felt like she looked like an even bigger star.
Yeah.
And the win really cemented her there. So yep. Huge win for her, star-making win. I think she is officially the face of the officially. I think here she's the face of the promotion.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
So we go backstage now, Scott.
What are their records?
Oh, jeez, good for you. Hang on 1 sec. Stupid thing logged me out.
Anyway, while he's doing that, tremendous match. Tremendous match, and good run by Victoria as heel women's champion. From November to here.
She's not done.
No, she's not done at all. But it was a good run.
Yeah. So Trish is 1-1. Jazz now 1-1. And Victoria 0-1.
Okay.
So these now match, we go.
These records don't get juicy for a while.
No. And would you say we're a tentative 3-for-3?
Yeah. 3-for-3 in the... I mean, obviously, it goes by... We're not talking about, oh my God, 3 5-star matches. Of course not. But 3-for-3 in the... I enjoyed that.
No match has been bad, and every match has met its expectations. Like, it's at least met or exceeded expectations so far.
Yes.
So we're 3-for-3 in meeting your goals.
Yep.
So Rock has an interview with the coach. He calls out all the people that booed him at Mania last year and during his concert called him a sellout. And one of my favorite lines ever, Rock sold out every WrestleMania he's been in.
Yes.
Yep.
Kind of the precursor to the great Mick Foley line a few years later.
Yeah.
A tremendous promo, vintage dickhead Rock, where he makes perfect sense while also being an asshole. So you can't beat that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep. I love this is one of my favorite Rock promos.
Yes. He's tremendous. Next up, we have our third title match of the evening. This for the Blue Belts, as the Red Belts, the World Tag Team titles, were on Heat. The WWE Tag Team titles are here. Your champions, your boys, JR, Mr. Haas, Mr. Benjamin, mm-hmm. technically still called Team Angle.
Yes.
They don't have their cool name yet. I think they get that by Judgment Day. Taking on two other really awesome teams. Obviously, former champions, Los Guerreros, Eddie and Chavo. And a pretty cool team, Chris Benoit, who has been a stud on SmackDown, and a returning guy, JR. Who is that returning guy?
Rhino.
What?
Had been sidelined since November 01, forced to deal with neck fusion surgery.
Wow.
Made his return on February 27th as Chris Benoit's tag team partner, and just as amped and flying around the ring as much as always.
Yep.
So on the 227 SmackDown, Rhino made his return. They defeated Matt Hardy and Shannon Moore when Rhino polished off Hardy with the gore. A week later, Rhino and Benoit defeated Team Angle in a non-title match. And on 313, Los Guerreros battled Benoit and Rhino to a no contest when Team Angle made their presence known and attacked both teams. All brawled a week later, and the triple threat battle for the titles was added here. Now, Scott, I've seen this question come up a bunch on the live chats page. Kind of came up while we were talking. Do you think Edge was supposed to be in this match? Do you think this is where he would have been if he didn't get hurt with Benoit?
Yeah, probably.
Kind of would have been a little bit of a payoff for the SmackDown 6.
Yeah, I couldn't see that anywhere else.
They have been friendly anyway in February.
Yeah, they and Benoit, remember, was a face during that whole stretch. He was one of the baby faces. He was stuck with Angle or whatever. What's the friend thinking of? Hesitant partners. Right. Bedfellows or whatever. So they I threw that one at you waiting for something, but
Bedfellows at the Erection Company.
With Oral Vampire. So I think Edge would have gone here, definitely. Would it have made a better match? I don't think it mattered. I think this match is...
I don't know!
Yeah, you better know. Billy, what's his name? I don't think it would have mattered because this match is awesome anyway. Your thoughts? I mean, this was one of those ones where you're like, just don't blow it, and it's at least 3.5 stars, you know?
Well, it was cool seeing the Guerreros back in the mix, I thought, being off pay-per-view as a unit. Rhino back from injury, good spot for him here. Benoit feels like a step down a bit, though, but still in the tag title, kind of SmackDown 6 mold. Team Angle has great swagger and heat by association. I thought they carry themselves very well. Cole wonders if Team Angle can handle the pressure of a big match. We get a wild start with all six brawling. We got Chavo Guerrero gets off to a strong start as well, controlling members of both teams and kind of teeing up Eddie. We get a nice mini Benoit-Eddie match in the middle there, and Cole notes that Eddie Guerrero's shoulder was hurt on a superplex. I'm sorry, was hurt on SmackDown. So they focus on that. Team Angle shows off their great double team style. Lots of alternating, but control. But again, a great pace. Not much slowing down. Benoit gets a really nice top rope superplex on Eddie, matched by a snap brainbuster by Eddie on Benoit. Do you feel like Benoit always felt like the alpha dog in the ring with these guys? He was always kind of the central figure of this match.
Absolutely, and I think piggybacking that, Cole mentions, when Benoit is going up the ramp, that one year earlier at WrestleMania 18, he was in a box with Benoit at Sky Dome, and he had a neck brace on, and he was in tears when the show opened because all he wanted to do was be a part of it.
Right.
So they definitely are positioning Benoit as the continuing to be the mid-card stud of SmackDown. Obviously not totally in the main events at this moment, but easily the mid-card stud of SmackDown. And I don't think there's any question because he could do everything with anybody, and you know, him and Eddie fit like a glove, and that'll step to the fore again later on in the year. Rhino's awesome. I mean,
and he hits a really nice gore on Haas and Chavo, and that was a good showing for him in his return. I thought they booked him well. He got just enough shine, but didn't really dominate. Team Angle steals a win when Shelton pins Chavo after a Rhino gore. Sad that Benoit lost, but he didn't really need the tag titles. He was kind of past it at this point.
Yeah,
a very fun match. I thought it could use a few more minutes, but it was good. Did you think it was better than the Survivor Series 02 match?
Oh.
I always looked at these two matches in the same vein. Like, very high expectations and just a little something missing here or there, just that couldn't get it over the hump.
Well, let's put it this way. Is Team Angle an upgrade or downgrade from Ray and Eddie? I mean, Ray and Edge. And is Rhino better than Kurt in his slot with Benoit?
No, but is the match better? I don't care about name value or whatever.
Well, I don't care about name value either. We're talking about different levels of talent. I mean,
oh, I don't care about talent level. I'm saying, was the match better? I'm not saying was there more talent. I'm saying was the match
right.
better.
Well, that's how I'm trying to differentiate it. It was good. I think the Survivor Series one was a little better. Just a little.
Yeah. They both always felt the same to me. Like,
no, you're right.
They lined up as classics, and they just were kind of... like, this one definitely needed more time. But I will say this. Watching it again for this, I liked it better than what it had, like, remembering it back in the day.
Right.
Like, I enjoyed watching it again. So, I think Team Angle, a wise move to let them retain. I mean, Benoit Rhino wasn't going to win the tag titles.
Are you surprised at how good they are right now?
No, because, I mean, I feel like we heard about it for so long. Like, them and OVW and everything else. So, and they seem to be cranking out a lot of guys at this point. I mean, you know, we knew Brock and Shelton were partners, and you always heard about the Haas brothers for years. So, I'm not too surprised. And they had a great leader.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're lacking the promo skills, but they don't really need it right now. So,
no,
and I'm glad they won. I don't think it made sense for either of the other teams to win. So this is a really marquee win for them.
I agree, 100%. I don't know. What would you consider their records? I guess Team Angle's 1-0. Does he go by individual guys? Or
yeah, individual guys. So they're both 1-0. Eddie 1-2. Chavo 0-1. Benoit 1-3. And this is Rhino's first match, 0-1.
Okay. Nothing in between here, actually. I'm pretty sure we went right to the...
You would be wrong, because we go backstage again.
Ugh.
And the Miller Lite Catfight girls are with Tori and Stacy arguing over who created WrestleMania.
Oh, there it is.
Hulk Hogan. Vince McMahon. And they decide to fight later in the night. So.
Okay. I thought that was before that. Okay. All right. We now begin the run.
Yeah. These are the hyped five. I mean, going in, this is like a 5-minute event show. And it was pretty much sold that way.
Yep.
And this is where we go. Do you like this structure of a card?
Yes.
We get the four undercard matches done, and now we get the big five well-hyped matches.
Yes. No, I have no problem with it. It's like a boxing mat. It's like a boxing or even an MMA card back in that time. You had the preliminaries, which that's no disrespect to those guys whatsoever.
No.
I mean, you need – if you're going to get – particularly because – and I mentioned this at No Way Out – because your actual main event is a – again, I tried to word it without sounding disrespectful. Suspect only because it's two guys who have never been in this spot before. You needed to make sure that you had an undercard that was loaded because you wanted to get the crowd thoroughly geeked by the time they get to the ring. If you had a flop undercard and then you had them as the main event, this show would be talked about very differently. So I think it needed to be structured this way. And I mentioned that at No Way Out. And beginning with this match down, they did exactly what they needed to do. All right, next up, we begin what will forever be known as the run, and that is the 8 WrestleMania run from 19 to 26 of Shawn Michaels and matches that are no less than 4 stars.
Unless you're Stephen Graham.
Unless you're Stephen Graham in every match, or Chad Campbell in every match is 1.5. All right. How do these two start, JR? Let's begin to tell the tale.
Well, if you remember back at the Rumble, this thing's been simmering. But on the 224 Raw, Chris Jericho and Christian teamed up to take on Test and Stacy Keibler in a lopsided mixed tag match. A couple of minutes in, Jericho handcuffed Test to the ropes and locked Stacy in the walls of Jericho. Shawn Michaels would make the save, and a week later, Jericho and Christian were again about to assault Stacy. Michaels made another save, but this time Jericho laid Michaels out with a chair and busted him open. Jericho officially challenged Michaels to a WrestleMania showdown. The next week, Michaels got some revenge when he paced to Jericho with a super kick. And finally, in the 324 Raw, Michaels and Jericho had a heated face-to-face confrontation that ended without any physical contact. Now, Scott, how excited were you for this match? Because Jericho hasn't had a great big singles match in a while. Coming off some good tag matches, his weird world title run. Did you think he'd dial it up, or were you heading in? Were you kind of like, well, we got to see? And because we didn't know what Michaels had in him either. I mean, he's had one great match, the SummerSlam match, and some other solid ones, but he hasn't really had a classic. Jericho hasn't had a classic in a while. Were you expecting balls-to-the-wall greatness, or were you kind of hesitant going in?
Well, I mean, Jericho is in a spot he's probably wanted to be in his whole life. Sean, it's hard to say that. You're probably mostly right that we weren't sure. And that's not because Sean, I mean, it's WrestleMania. Sean's not going to dog a match by any stretch. It's a question of how he truly is and how his health really is. I mean, he hasn't really wrestled a match since, really hasn't wrestled a match since Armageddon. I mean, the Rumble he did, he had some contact, but not as much as a normal Rumble would be. And he didn't wrestle it, No Way Out. His Raw, at Raw, he hasn't done that much yet. So we were still very skeptical about what the future held for him and whether or not, you know, Triple H knows Shawn pretty well. So you knew that their matches were going to be very, very good because Triple H knew what he was able to do with Shawn while Shawn was getting his feet wet again. Jericho, desperate to get off the schneid because the last, you know, 5 months of 6 months of 2002 were not great for him. They were definitely needing something special here. So was I skeptical? A little bit. On paper, any match on paper looks good. Wow, these two wrestlers are great. Yeah, they're great in general. Are they great right now?
Yep.
That's the key. So I was a little skittish, like, well, you know, this match isn't going to suck, but on paper, you're expecting 4.5 stars. But are they both in that frame of mind for 4.5 stars? That's what it came down to.
Well, it was a fantastic build in anticipation. Michael's first Mania match since WrestleMania 14 in 1998. Tremendous Jericho tights here, the aqua blue. I think some of maybe my favorite pair of his of all time. Really nice spot for Jericho after a shaky 0-2 and not really a far drop from 18, surprisingly enough. Weird kind of HBK entrance with the confetti gun. Kind of odd. He does feel cooler outside of that, though. Did you feel, Scott, this was the final appearance of the old HBK?
We kind of
talked about when he returned, and he still kind of had that old HBK swagger a little bit, and still a little bit of attitude in him, not really doing all the Jesus stuff yet. I don't know. Did you feel like this was kind of the end of that, and soon after is when he kind of makes the transformation, or do you think it lasts a little bit longer?
I knew that Sean had matured and he obviously had Jesus in his life, but I'm wondering if backstage they were telling him, I wouldn't go too far with that yet. I think people want to see the old Sean. I mean, I'm not expecting 97, you know, dick promos or anything, but, you know, I think they were expecting the Sean from WrestleMania 14, where he was a little, you know, where he had the anger swagger, but
I think part of it, too, is just that he's not back full-time yet.
Well, that, too.
So
he
does
has
he
shown
really
the religious
need,
side.
Right, but does he need that new character if he's not really on TV? You know what I mean? Like, he can just kind of be Shawn Michaels. He doesn't really need that new hook yet because he's not on constantly. He's not in long-term or, you know, repetitive feuds or moving from feud to feud. He's kind of just doing this for now. So it kind of like he didn't really need to craft that whole new look yet.
Yeah, and I think we were all definitely skeptical of what kind of schedule he had because, like I said, other than since he lost to Triple H in Armageddon, he's been in really one major match, and that was the Rumble. And he really didn't do that much in the Rumble. So we still weren't sure. Was this just, you know, we could all say, was this just so Jericho could get some shine and get the match he's wanted his whole life for? And was Jericho going to win? Was he going to put Jericho over and then leave?
I want to get to that. We'll get to that at the end.
No, I know. Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, that's going along with my kind of going along with our point here about whether Sean needed to change his character if he was going to be around for it to be changed. Mm-hmm. You know.
I love the look here with the sun setting. I thought the arena looked awesome as it was starting to get dark.
I was about to say that. I felt like the switch flipped.
Yeah.
And now
just
we
in
had
time
the undercard.
The
it was a little bright. Now we're into the big time. The crowd's dark. The lights are down. We're into like big time now. I definitely caught that. Definitely. I agree with you on that.
Big time feel for sure. Early feel out, testing the waters. Jericho pinballing around early, and the crowd's just loving it. Jericho rattled for quite a bit. Can't really get back on track completely. Jericho gets the walls on the floor, and a heavy threat of Jericho trying to usurp HBK here. That's really the whole story of this match. He's trying to become Shawn Michaels. Jericho's great arrogance as he takes over. You can kind of feel his confidence building. He feels completely different than he did a year ago. Compare that, Matt, how he's moving around and acting here to his match with Triple H at 18. It's like a whole new man.
You're talking about Jericho. Yeah.
It feels completely different.
Yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah.
Crowd bites on every pin attempt, and they're rallying Shawn Michaels. Jericho kips up and does the Michaels pose, and then Michaels kips up and attacks him. That was a great spot. Nice moonsault from Shawn for a near fall, and we get great Northern Lights into reversals and pin attempt sequences. Michael survives the walls. Jericho, really close two counts sprinkled throughout the match. Jericho hits Sweet Chin Music for a near fall, and then mirror images except Jericho sneaks in, cheating and shadiness wherever he can. I like that, too. They're almost doing like the same sort of moves, except Jericho's cheating. Michaels hits a big elbow. That was a great moment when he hits that off the top rope. Crowd loses it when Jericho ducks Sweet Chin Music and gets the walls. Michaels gets Sweet Chin Music, but he's too tired to cover, so he gets a great flash roll-up a few seconds later. And the crowd was kind of sensing it was coming, so they build and then pop big at the three. Like, as soon as he rolls them up, they start to lose it, and they get hype, and then they go crazy when Shawn wins. I thought it was a fantastic old-school match, no hoopla at all, straight wrestling. I thought many people were pissed that Jericho lost at the time because it still felt like Shawn's farewell tour. So I remember it was a lot of hand-wringing at the time when Jericho lost this match, a lot of anger thinking that this part-time guy wouldn't even put Jericho over. Because the guy, fans are still sensitive about Jericho, too, after his treatment in 02. So many felt like he needed a win here. Jericho gets his heat back at the end. Did you think that was needed? He kicks Shawn in the balls after they hug.
They must have thought that he needed it.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want Shawn winning to bury him.
I mean, it was funny, I guess, that it fits Jericho's character, but it felt a little tagged on.
Yeah, I'm... It did seem like it was an add-on at the end.
I just didn't really feel like it fit the whole old-school match, but I guess Jericho's such a dick. I don't know if many other people could have made that work.
Right, no, yeah, that's true.
So, definitely a show stealer on what's a loaded show. So what's your thought on Jericho losing? At the time, forget that Michaels ends up sticking around as a full-time guy, because once you know that, then the finish makes sense.
I was a little surprised, because the evidence has been there that he's not sticking around. Is he going to only wrestle big shows? Was he going to be gone until SummerSlam or whatever? You definitely don't know if there was a... you don't know if there was a future here. And he hasn't done much since the Rumble. So probably nothing since the Rumble, really.
Say Michaels didn't stick around full time. Like, say he does a couple matches a year. Do you think Jericho should have won?
Yes. What good would it have been then? What are you building to? Just to get a returns, you know. Shawn doesn't need feel-good moments anymore. I mean, we're past that now, you know. He got the win, the world title win at the Survivor Series that nobody thought he really even needed. Did he really need like a welcome back to Mania, Shawn, win? I mean, get a grip. You know, that kind of stuff is sometimes a little passe. I certainly think that if you're talking about brass tacks and you're talking about, you know, the everyday roster and you're talking about what's going to go on in April, Backlash, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, Jericho needed the win. I don't think there's any question about it. Obviously, they knew something we didn't, because Jericho Shawn would stick around. And you look down the line 5 years later, and Jericho certainly gets him back in spades, but we don't know that at the time. So I as much as the match was very good, I was a little iffy on the ending. I thought Jericho definitely needed it because the evidence was there. It's very simple that Shawn was not sticking around. That this was a, yay, he won his last title. Yay, he's back at WrestleMania. And then what? Was he going to get, like, the Taker schedule now?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah I can. I know we always, you know, we sometimes have these conspiracy theory conversations. And, you know, so most of the time I'll agree. Sometimes I'll disagree with you. This one, I tend to lean towards your thinking that at the time, if Shawn was not sticking around, what was beating Jericho going to do for him? You know?
Right.
Jericho definitely needed the boost.
And the best part for Jericho is just that it's an awesome match. So he arguably maybe had, it's tough, but in the top three match of the night on a loaded show. So to me, even the fact that he's in conversation for Match of the Night on a show like this proves he won anyway. You know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that works out. And it's an awesome match. It's really, really, really good.
It's very good. Yeah. It's very good. Not five stars. I mean, Sean would have better Mania.
I think it's close.
Down the line,
it's
but it's pretty
close.
Yeah. I graded it in our on our original write up. I graded it slightly higher than you did.
Yeah, watching it again, I may go close to 4.5. I mean, we don't do like quarters, but it's probably like a 4.25 kind of.
Yeah.
Dealing with me.
Now, what do we have for records for Sean and Jericho now?
Yo. Shawn Michaels is 8-6. Chris Jericho 2-3. So Michaels is definitely our Taker was 11-0, right? Yeah, Michaels is definitely our Mania long man here at his 14th show.
14th show. Yep, 8-6.
All right. So we get a few things now in between here. We get an interesting promo on the screens in the arena, and it gets a large pop. And those screens told us that Goldberg, Scott, of WCW fame, would be a Backlash. So we'll save that because I think we're gonna need to fill some time for that show. So
yes,
we won't get into that here. No. More Limp Bizkit waste of time. We get another effing concert and song by them. Completely unnecessary.
Oh, Jesus.
And this is where we could have probably had that tag match, I guess, as well, if you cut that and what's to come. So it's almost like this is an old school intermission between this concert and the next thing, which is the Catfight girls come out. Coach hosts that. The girls are very hot, like you said, but more waste of time. Stacy and Tori show up, and they have a big pillow fight on this bed. Mindless TNA. And it's even a half-assed pillow fight. The Catfight girls are barely even touching each other.
Yeah, it's a waste.
And then they all get naked. Coach gets taken down and pinned.
They all get naked. That sounds like one of my blush-offs. Yeah, and then they all get naked. And
it was a mess. It was a stupid waste of time mess. So between that and this Limp Bizkit segment, we could have had that tag match, or at least given the other two matches that were shortchanged on the show a little bit more time.
Yeah, I mean, we give that tag. I'll tell you this. We give that tag another 6 minutes. It could have been Match of the Night of many.
Or even if you give that 3 and the opener 3.
Mm.
So, anyway. Yeah. Not much here, but no. we got bigger fish to fry.
Yes. Next up, another...
Time to play the game!
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. Mm, I won't go.
Many would say this match goes way the F over the borderline, but we'll talk about it.
Yes. All right. We have our World Heavyweight Championship match right now. Speaking of World Heavyweight Championship matches, we see the Catfight girls, we see Stacy, and we see way too much Limp Bizkit, and we see no Scott Steiner.
Yes, that's true.
Anywhere on this show.
Gone. I mean, this guy has main event of the last two pay-per-views and title matches and is not even on heat nowhere. Not even a mention of him, pretty much.
It's like he totally
on
managed.
This show. It's like he doesn't exist.
Oh, God.
And now we head to the Erection Company. So the night after No Way Out, Raw had a 20-man battle royal to determine who would face Triple H at WrestleMania for the world title. Booker eliminates The Rock to win it. Booker T, that is. Triple H would demean Booker in the coming weeks, commenting on his past as a delinquent who went to jail for robbery. Is this how he talks to you, Scott, when he's in a dominant mood?
Get the cell for me.
You're a filthy, filthy robber, Criscolo. Bend over. So Booker would beat Triple H twice, once on the 217 Raw in a tag match and one in a one-on-one title match, non-title, on 324. There's a skit on the 317 Raw. Booker's buddy Goldust confronts Triple H and Ric Flair and hysterically stutters to the word WrestleMania. The build-up was a bit controversial. Triple H inquired if you people are meant to be champions. He tried to cover it up by calling Booker an entertainer and not a wrestler, but the racial overtones were clear. He was also referenced Booker's nappy hair and told him to dance for him. After that appearance on the Extra Point, Triple H also downplayed Booker's WCW title runs by mocking their less-than-illustrious list of champions. The way the feud went, it seemed as like a lock that Booker should walk out with the title as payback for Hunter's condescending remarks over the previous weeks. However, due to the impending arrival of Goldberg, the title seemingly needed to stay on a heel. This would be Triple H's last WrestleMania win until 2009, Scott.
Yes, it is. Indeed it is.
You people.
Awful. Yeah. So
wearing a Redskins shirt.
So much wrong with this. So much wrong.
Yes. Before we continue, though, I just found it on YouTube. Here is the the hilarious promo that we were referring to. Let me just fix this here. Okay. Here's the hilarious promo.
I know you're feeling pretty good about yourself right now. Pretty confident. But you know something? I know that deep down, down there,
what? Where?
In the cock, cockles of your heart, you are worried.
Yeah. Is it what?
And at WrestleMania,
we can keep going with that, but that was pretty much the point right there.
All right, so this mess, it starts with the asininity. Is that a word? Asininity? I'm going to coin it tonight.
Yeah.
Of a battle royal to name the number one contender for a WrestleMania world title shot. They had nothing else they could come up with. You put Booker over Strong, and then you basically just... Like, you might as well let a Triple H out there in blackface dancing around, right? I mean,
this looks like Piper at WrestleMania 6.
I mean, it's pretty absurd, right? I mean, you got you people, and then they tried to cover it like you WCW entertainers kind of thing. But I mean, it was just not comfortable. And then the nappy hair, I mean, you might as well have Rush Limbaugh out there with Flair at ringside. And the whole feud just screamed that Booker had to win, and I don't agree that Booker should have won, but the way they booked the feud, he kind of had to, and they put themselves in that position.
And then they actually have a singles match already.
Which is stupid, too. The whole build to this was an effing disaster.
Yeah, I don't agree. I agree with you 100%. I don't endorse any of the nonsense that led to this match.
And like I said, I mean, I get why they didn't want Booker to win. That's fine. Don't have him win, but don't degrade him with racist overtones and saying guys like him could never be world champion when you got this prim and proper white dude with this pretty hair all dressed up in a suit. It's true. I mean, it was just stupid. Unless he's going to lose, it's just stupid. Or unless you're in world class or whatever, 1985. this makes no sense, you know? And right. You got Iceman King Parsons out there. But this, I mean, this was really pointless to do that kind of build and then have Booker lose. And I think everyone wanted to believe Booker was going to win. And I think it was... I'll have to ask him next time he's on. I think Scott Keith pretty much called that he was going to lose. And I remember a lot of people did not agree with that. Mm-hmm. They thought there was no way Hunter would win after all that. But the flags were there, Scott, because Booker picked up two non-title wins. And that's usually a very big, glaring red flag in WWF land that the guy's not winning the big one when he wins two matches like that.
Oh, absolutely. When do you ever see a singles match preceding a WrestleMania match? They never did that anymore.
No.
So.
And that should have been a huge five alarm fire going off in everyone's head. So yeah. A weird build. Booker wins a battle royal. A good payoff for Booker. A good spot for him after being super hot in 2002. He finally feels cleansed of WCW. He now feels like a WWE guy, kind of re-elevated. Hunter and the Raw title feel mid-card by this point. They've been kind of in the mid-card of all these pay-per-views. It doesn't feel like the title. They're in a tough spot coming off of Shawn Jericho. Booker gets a really big pop, and a win here could have really made him. Triple H has his luscious purple tights on right out of the Chris Golo's third drawer.
That's right.
Story is difference in upbringing if Booker could win the big one in the real big promotion, not WCW. Basic early moments, Booker looks good, some hard-hitting moves. King is just brutal here, harping on Booker's upbringing. Just awful, awful. It takes you completely out of the match, him and JR.
Because
JR
terrible.
Has to defend it and snipes back at him. It's just awful. Completely takes you out of it. Triple H drills Booker with a great stiff clothesline in the corner. A very slower pace, and it's glaring after our last match.
Mm-hmm.
The best parts here when Booker's on offense feels different than his usual stuff. Booker, a nice bump over the top on a missed scissor kick. Flair attacks Booker on the floor. Drops Booker on his knee on the steps, and Triple H starts to work the knee. We get an Indian deathlock. Very slow knee work here. Booker hits a great scissors kick that doesn't totally make sense when you consider the knee injury. Booker fends off Flair, hits a Harlem hangover, and then he crushed Hunter's head with it. It was pretty nasty. It landed hard on his face.
Yes, yeah.
The hangover bangs up Booker's knee, though, and he can't cover. Booker gets up, his knee gives out, pedigree hits, Triple H hits a pedigree on Booker, and Booker lands hard on his knee, and you get a long pause before Hunter covers in a shocking finish, very anticlimactic. It felt like Booker was going to pull out the win, the way the match was kind of building towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think after that build, obviously we talked about this, should Booker have won? I think we both agree that he probably should have. A fine match overall, just very spotty selling. It's just kind of there. Not really great for a WrestleMania world title match. And the, you know, the bitch point that everyone always brings up is how long Hunter waited after the pedigree. I think it's like 23 seconds or something.
Mm.
And, I mean, I feel like Booker was already shit on enough that it didn't really make a difference as much as people say. Maybe it could have been like 14 seconds. It wouldn't have been as bad.
Right,
as, right. 23 or whatever it is. I mean, the story's there. Booker hurts his knee and he's just really incapacitated. But I don't think Hunter needed to lay there as long as he did, even though I think he was just selling the hangover. So I feel like a guy like Hunter is just not going to win in a position like that. You know what I'm saying? So even if he's, right. even if he wasn't doing it to hurt Booker, even if he was just doing it just because he was selling or whatever, I feel like he's not going to win because people are just going to assume he's burying Booker.
Right. Definitely at that point in 2003.
Right. He has not had good matches since he's returned, unless the guy named Shawn Michaels is across the ring from him.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Oh, there's
or
no
Hulk
doubt about
Hogan,
it.
Amazingly enough.
Yeah, I know. No doubt about it. I did enjoy the Indian deathlocks were good. There were some middle portions of this match that weren't bad. I just don't know where the writing was coming from. Just the whole package from beginning to end, from the night after No Way Out till we get to here, was just one big dumpster fire. I mean, it just wasn't good. I understand. You have a guy who's been a Ric Flair fan his whole life. He wants to emulate those awesome, you know, 85, 86, 87 NWA title matches. The audience just, you can't do that now. We're in a different era of time. You can't force that on people when a lot of these fans don't even know what the hell they're watching. It's not the same thing. And Flair, it's just the way you deliver it. Like Flair, you know what's funny, JR? Flair could have said those exact same lines to Junkyard Dog. I want to use a black wrestler from that era, in 1987, 86, and it wouldn't have sounded the way that it ended up sounding like, because just Flair knows how to deliver it. Plus, you're in the South, and sadly, they probably all would have probably...
Oh, it's a different era. I mean, whatever.
You know, but my point is, the whole package was supposed to be built like your prototypical Ric Flair NWA world title
feud. You just didn't need it. Booker already had the heat.
And sadly, it's just not that... Right, and sadly... This is not the audience that has the patience for that. And Hunter just should have treated it like an Attitude Era feud, like he did, you know, 99, 2000, 2001, like he did before, instead of trying to be 1986 Rick.
And the problem is he's trying to wrestle like it, and it's just not working. Especially when you look around him at all the other matches going on, and that just feels so slow and dated.
Yeah.
We just came off an awesome Jericho Shawn Michaels match, and now these two slugs out there trying to figure out how to match it, and it's just like, and not to bash on Booker, he worked hard here, but
mm-hmm.
and when you look at what's still to come, it just felt really out of place. I mean,
they both Yeah, go ahead.
To me, this is the first match of the night that doesn't meet expectations.
Yeah. They both worked hard. I'm not going to say that neither of them dogged it for any stretch. It's just that was the wrong game plan. It wasn't that they executed the game plan poorly. It's just that game plan itself was just not the right one to use in this situation. And just the slogging. Oh, my God. I was so beat up. Oh, can I move my hand? Oh, God.
Let me rub your knee, Chris Golo. Lay there for 45 seconds before I finish on you.
I got to make sure I don't dirty these luscious purple tights. And then...
not good.
I have a song about, you know, I was going to find Purple Rain, but, it is just not the right
purple all over you.
Ew, that means he's got a dis. Never mind. The whole point premise is the game plan was not the right way to go about it.
No.
And they at a show that had such historical significance and sachet cachet, it did have sachet to a certain extent, that this just seemed like something you would see at, like, you know, In Your House 2 rather than 8 years later. And that's sad. It's a bummer for both guys, for Hunter and for Booker T. It sucks. Did this hurt Booker T? No. Nah. Booker was fairly bulletproof, although it would take him a couple years before he'd get to the level he deserved to be at. And Hunter just, all right, well, you beat another guy, whoop-de-doo, and you move on. You know? But that promo that popped up before the match is the reason we had this. So I remember trying to defend that on boards all over the place throughout 2003. That was a fight of epic proportions. So there you go. Triple H retains his World Heavyweight Championship in a average to good, but barely good, match against Booker T. All right, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we have three matches left, all of them absolute gems in their own special way. And all of them mark the end of what has been historical moments in the history of the business. And we have a great main event as we go from purple juice to red, white, and blue. First, many words, because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcast? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant.
Sorry.
The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover.
Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
This is Gary Michael Capetta, and this is the Place to Be podcast with Scott Riscola and Justin Rosero.
Fourth pack is back, cause I'm mass destruction. Guess who's here? The bad boys of wrestling. Just in competition when the war does the mission. Not no mercy, see the rings like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the war pack. Here to prove a point, number one, best believe that you don't want to tussle with them. I'll be there for.
We're going to march down to Erection Avenue.
And then we'll do
and then I'll make you harder.
And then we'll get purple tires. No.
All right. So PlayStation.com, your one-stop spot for all your pop culture needs in this pop culture world. Scott, day two, round two, day one of the PTBN World Cup of TV Characters knockout round is underway. So make sure you head over there and vote. We have some interesting matchups on tap. This week, we had a new review by Brian Bayless as he makes his way through all the TNA weekly pay-per-views from back in time. He's on pay-per-view number 3 from July 3rd, 2002. Josh Richard with a very timely piece for the Emmys. He's back, and he talks about the battle between Matthew McConaughey and Bryan Cranston for the Emmy for Best Drama Actor. All your reviews, Matt Petticord's SmackDown, Ryan Everett's main event. We had a new episode of the Still Real to Us podcast as well. A good episode, a good installment, I should say, of The High Spot, talking about Bully Ray, Impact of Daniel Bryan, and a potential Hulk Hogan WrestleMania opponent, Scott Criscolo. A little fodder for you on the main event next week.
Yes.
Cowboy Goes to Class was back in the classroom looking at SummerSlam 2011. Kind of an interesting take from Roger. Not a big fan of the John Cena CM Punk match from that show, so check out the Cowboy's thoughts. The PTBN Seinfeld series rewatch continues. We're into season 2. We're through the first 3 episodes. Episode 4 coming up tomorrow. Big Seinfeld fans, you should head over and check that out. We had a new episode of the Steve Carino Show, as well as the Bauer Show, the main event. You had our buddy Jimmy Stewart from 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston was on with Andrew Reich, Ben Morris, and Steve Will. You guys all broke down SummerSlam.
Yep.
New episodes of Titans of Wrestling, the Unspecial 2, the one-year birthday of the show. And they went back and checked out some random matches. The movies of the Place to Be generation through 1997. Be sure to check that out as well. And the new episode of the Kevin Kelly Show featuring Ray Rowe and Rob Conway, and a new pro wrestling super show as well, where he had we had Ben Morse, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Rishon, and they drafted the current world of North American wrestling. They built their own promotions. They're going to do some booking on that as well. And Scott, one piece I talked about heavily on Kevin's show. I want to just reiterate it here. So it's a companion piece to the new Where the Big Boys Play episodes. Matt D from PWO, ProWrestlingOnly.com, is going to be doing the Column Beyond. So basically a companion piece to the new podcasts. So this one, he looked at Clash 16, and he picked 2 points and really broke them down in a great way. So he picked the Battle Royale in that show and follows one-man gang throughout the match. And instead of watching the whole match, he just follows him.
I just watched that, actually, too.
And he watches everything, all his movements, the way he reacts and acts throughout the match. And it was a really cool experiment to watch how one guy maneuvers through a battle royal like that. He also broke down the Sting-Johnny B. Badd match. It was kind of maligned at the time and not great star rating-wise. But he talks about how there were goals specifically set up for that match and how they delivered on them. So really, if you like in-depth kind of wrestling psychology pieces, Matt D. does an awesome job with this one. So very highly recommended there. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation, info, PlaceToBeNation.com if you have any questions for us. And again, if you want to get in the live chats, you can email us as well. PlaceToBeNation, visit it often, please. Help support us. If you're going to buy something on Amazon, there's a big old link you can click there on the right-hand side. It takes you right through to Amazon.com, make your purchase, and send a little love our way. All right. Where are we at, yo?
Well, before we went to break, meant to do Triple H's and Booker T's WrestleMania records.
Yes, we did. So let me pull those up. Triple H 5-4, Booker T 0-2.
Okay. All right. Next up, another match that you kind of like. Another match kind of like Shawn and Jericho that you weren't quite sure what to make of it. And in the end, you ended up getting an absolute gem.
In a different way.
Yes. Floor is yours, JR. How did we get here?
After Hogan's loss to The Rock at No Way Out, Vince McMahon came out with the 3-6 SmackDown and told Hogan he didn't want him back. He hated him for leaving him in 1993 for WCW and then testifying against him in the ensuing steroid trial. Vince then challenged Hogan to a match at WrestleMania, where if Hogan lost, he would have to retire. Later that night, Hogan accepted the challenge, and 2 weeks later on the 320 SmackDown, Mean Gene Okerlund showed up, presided over a contract signing between the two. Vince signed, and as Hogan was about to sign, Vince hit him with a chair, busted him open, dipped the pen in Hogan's blood, and forced Hogan to sign the contract with it. In an episode of Confidential prior to the show, an interesting video package was shown on the history between these two men, including comments from past wrestlers and celebrities, most notably Bob Costas and Roddy Piper. The main crux of this match and the comments in the Confidential piece was finally to prove which of these two men was responsible for the boom period of the 80s. Did Hogan make Vince, or did Vince make Hogan? So there was a lot of hype. Mm-hmm. Really pushed this thing, almost pushed it to the level where it felt like the main event of the show. And mm-hmm. I know there was some thought that people thought this would go last because it was the main picture on the poster, it'd be on the cover of the DVD. Mm-hmm. There was a strong feeling that they were hyping this up to be the biggest match of the night. And it was, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 20 years worth of build behind it. A lot of real feelings. It felt very realistic when they were out there yelling and arguing. Because I'm sure it was a debate they've had for years beforehand, who made who. The Costas thing was a cool pop-up, and I remember watching that Confidential. And I'll give my boy Mark Clare full credit here, because he predicted the appearance later based off that Confidential piece, which we'll talk about in a minute. He said that this guy was going to show up. And so full credit there. So big-time hype and build, set up like the main event, like we mentioned. The crowd is jacked for Hogan. A retirement stip on the line for Hogan. Vince is juiced big time here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought this was a good spot for Hogan, too. Out of the main storylines, out of the title picture, a money match, a good Mania slot here. Did you think this was a much better use of him now that we've kind of run through his usefulness in 02?
Absolutely. This is definitely a matchup I was excited about. No doubt about it. It was a novelty match with a lot of hype. Not just a, you know, novelty like Andre in the 70s novelty. But definitely a spot. You know, he's not in anybody's way. He's not in any title match's way. Perfect spot for him here. I agree.
Hogan rocks Vince with strikes early, and then Vince works Hogan over. We get the test of strength with some old-school power stuff. That's probably right out of Vince's wet dreams. Hogan uses a chair. He drills Vince in the head, and Vince starts bleeding. Hogan lays in some chair shots to the back and is really unloading on Vince. Probably a lot of anger, like most guys do in their matches with Vince. Vince gets his own stiff chair shots in as well. Hugo takes a stiff shot at ringside. He blades Hugo Savinovich, the Spanish announcer. Pretty stiff and rough brawl considering the participants. Hogan's bloody now. Vince's blood is sick. Takes a great bump off a ladder. A leg drops Hogan through a table. And then possibly the greatest moment of WWF camera work of all time. We get a shot that's even with the ring apron from across the ring. And across the way, Vince McMahon peers up over the apron, face bleeding, and grabs a lead pipe and just has this evil smile on his face. Just, I mean, the framing, the look. I mean, just I remember just dying laughing when I first saw it. And it's just an amazing shot.
Yes, I actually I sent that picture to you guys today.
I think it rivals Austin at 13, the blood in the sharpshooter. Like, to me, yeah. It's that great.
Yep.
That iconic.
Yep. I agree 100%. They should have made a shirt. I'm surprised they didn't.
Really awesome. So
Vince
Hogan
could have had his own shirt.
Hogan blocks the pipe shot with a low blow. And then we get the awesome surprise return of Roddy Piper. As I mentioned, that was who Claire said he was going to return after seeing that Confidential piece. He teases hitting Vince, but hits Hogan with a nice heel turn. Hogan kicks out. The crowd's red hot here. Brian Hebner won't let Vince use the pipe. Vince shoves him to the floor. And it kind of a messed up bump. He really chucks him out there. And after Hebner hits the ropes and like bounces back in the ring, and then Hogan just dumps him hard. I mean, Vince dumps him hard. Sylvain Grenier shows up. Remember, he was the referee from No Way Out. Some nice symmetry there. Vince hits a leg drop. Hulks up. Hogan hulks up after the leg drop, and the crowd's just going batshit. Hogan wipes out Sylvain and hits three very crisp leg drops. He's moving pretty well here, surprisingly enough. I thought Cole had a fantastic call, and I thought this is a very good garbage match, shockingly good when many thought it would suck. We get this weird-ass Shane McMahon appearance who comes out and asks Hogan to leave and checks on Vince. And then Vince kind of just lifts his head, looks at Hogan, and gives him the double bird while he's bleeding out on the mat. So another great moment for Vince, photography-wise. But What did you think of this match, Scott, overall? Did it pay off? Was it more than you expected it? And where do you rank it with, we talked about this with Kevin on last Wednesday, where do you compare it to Vince's match with Shane at 17?
I think this is better. I think this is much better. Vince and Shane...
Kevin likes Shane better, just for a reference point.
Okay. I think this is better because, I mean, obviously, I don't think Shane wanted to hurt, not that he was hurting Hogan, but I don't think he wanted to bust his kid open or anything. And I think there was too much other rigmarole in that match with Linda and Trish and Foley as the ref. And I think,
well, I think you'd argue that's what makes it good, right?
That match is great.
Yeah.
It's not better than this. I think these two, because I don't think this came out of nowhere. I had a feeling going in that Shane and Vince was going to be good. This just absolutely slapped me in the face. I had no idea these guys were going to come out, and I thought they were going to kind of monkey fuck their way through, you know, 7, 8, 9 minutes and then leave. No way. These guys went out and put the pedal to the metal. You could argue, JR, that Hogan worked just as hard in this match as he did in any of the matches in 2002.
Definitely, yeah.
To bust each other open, I mean, they were stiffing the hell out of each other. I agree with you. This is like a Vince wet dream, all these fucking power moves and jacking his muscles. Oh, he was all over this. And I was literally stunned. I remember being at Mike's house, and I was literally stunned at how amazing this match was. It may go down as one of my, like, 10 favorite WrestleMania matches of all time. That's how great this match is for me. I didn't expect it. Who expected it, really, to be that good? Who expected them to both bust each other open and the Piper run in and just all this other stuff? Nobody expected any of it. You expected kind of, like I said, 9 minutes of kind of floating around.
Did you like Piper going heel?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, he had to, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely hates Hogan more than he hates Vince.
that's what made them all. Real or imaginary. That's what made this whole thing cool, that they all hate each other. Yeah. It all dates back 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, who expected it? And the pipe shot and Vince just, you know, glaring over it in that heel look with the fucking blood. I mean, the guy's a genius. I mean, he may be getting up there in years now, and his decisions now may be a little suspect, but when he was in his prime in terms of the Attitude Era and before that, the guy knows his shit. I mean, he knows how to make a match look good, whether it's backstage or it's in the ring. He knows what makes a memorable match. And we'll do the best he can. And I've said this all along, JR, going all the way back to that first, his first in-ring match, which I guess would be St. Valentine's Day Massacre. He would not expect his charges to do anything he wouldn't do himself. And I think that's what makes Vince great in that aspect. If he's going to go out there 50 or at the time, what, 60-something years old, or 50-something years old probably, and you got Hogan, who's what? What was he at the time? Probably 55, 56. Maybe he wasn't that old.
Yeah, maybe he was.
I think he was, yeah.
Yeah. To go out there and put on that kind of... I mean, I'm sorry. They were better than Triple H and Booker.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of sad.
Not even close.
That's sad.
Hogan's 61 now, so he was just...
So he was 50. 50. So he's 50, and Vince is probably close to 70 now, so...
Yeah, Vince is 69. Just turned 69 the other day.
So he was 59... And Hogan was 50. And isn't that amazing? You'd think they were older.
I know. They seemed older.
You'd think that Vince was that much older. But they brought everything to the table. I can't talk enough about this match and how amazing it was. That these two guys, 50-something years old, put on a better match than two, you know, early 30-somethings did, you know.
Well, they had
earlier.
All the bells and whistles to play with, too. I mean, a little bit different setup. So
true,
I'm not going to completely compare it that evenly. But, yeah, and a great match. Worth all the hype. Worth all the build. I think it probably surprised a lot of people. Vince usually delivers in these situations. So, and he'll have more matches this year. 2003 ends up being a very active year for Vince after a not very active year in 2002. For the back half of it, anyway. So... well, you know, we'll talk more about this feud. It's not going away. It sticks around for a while. But definitely a really fun match. And again, another match that exceeds expectations here on this card. And still, I feel like we're just only one down match so far on the night.
Yeah. And this is probably Hogan's swan song. I don't think you'll ever get a better. I think, you know, a lot of people, and I even joke about it in my written comments that, you know, he lost all his ability 7 years earlier. And, you know, I kind of retract that a little bit because he did have a decent 2002. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you'll get a – I don't think – at this point, I think Hogan gave everything he possibly had left in this match.
Yep.
And even he looked pretty spooky with his blood on his face. So it was just – everything about this match was fantastic. You can't give it 5 stars. But, I mean, I was pretty close. I mean, I give it 4 – I give it 4.5, but it could be 4.25 if you don't want to go too high. But still, I mean, it's ridiculous how great this match is for 250-somethings.
So you know, Hogan moves to 8-3-1 all time at Mania. Vince 0-2.
Mm-hmm.
All right, why don't we move on? Because I think our next match is going to take a while here too.
Yes. Yep. Another match with dripping with history.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to the build.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about the record of one of the guys.
All right. So after Rock defeated Hulk Hogan at No Way Out, he decided to wrestle exclusively on Raw. The Raw after No Way Out had a 20-man battle royal to determine who would face Triple H at WrestleMania for the world title. Booker T would win that battle royal by tossing The Rock, but after the match, The Rock ran the fans down for turning their backs on him. Rock said he couldn't believe the fans had voted Steve Austin Superstar of the Decade at the Raw 10 special, even after walking out on the company. After pummeling Eric Bischoff and No Way Out, Austin came back to Raw in 3-3, thanked the fans for the response, knowing that there were many probably upset the way he had left the previous June. Rock came out in the middle of the promo and said he eats him up, that he hasn't beaten Austin at WrestleMania, and challenges him to a match there. Bischoff would throw a wrench in the mix when he said on the 310 Raw that Rock would face Booker T in a match, and if Rock won, he would then move on to face Triple H at WrestleMania instead of Austin. Rock decided he didn't want that chance because beating Austin meant more to him than winning the world title, so he picked his own opponent for that match instead, and he chose the Hurricane, who had been jawing with him in segments over the past couple weeks. In those segments, Rock was going so far as to hysterically call him the Hamburglar, as well as arguing over who was the better superhero, Hurricane or Scorpion King. Thanks to Austin's deference, Hurricane actually won that match, which essentially set up Rock and Austin for Mania. On the 324 Raw, Austin was banned from the building by Bischoff, and Rock performed his epic rock concert.
They got some fat ass women there, and Rock is gonna just say no.
What a song, just say no.
Well, I might take a plane, I might take a train. How do you people live here? You must be insane. I'm leaving Sacramento. Sacramento, I won't stay. Check this out, check this out.
Check it out.
But I'll be sure to come back when the Lakers beat the Kings and Men.
Awesome stuff there. And
my favorite line in the history of that show ever.
And the whole thing was awesome. The whole thing was great too. Remember, he goes, "Oh, Austin, why are you out there selling bootleg shirts of The Rock? Get out of here!" Austin would come
Nelson
in.
Guitar.
Yep, it also would come in and smash that guitar, the Willie Nelson guitar. So, a fun build. I remember actually at the time though being a little disappointed when they announced this match at first, because I kind of felt like we had seen it so many times, and I didn't really know obviously what was happening behind the scenes, so we didn't get that feeling just yet. But when it was first announced, I remember kind of being like, eh, we've seen this twice already. We're going to do this again. There's nothing better these guys can do. We have all these other people around. That changed quickly, my tune there. But originally, that was my feeling. Did you feel the same way?
A little bit. I never get disappointed watching the two of them, so I wasn't totally bummed. I was hoping Austin would get a title match or something, but we didn't know what was going to happen. But
right.
But I wasn't bummed. They're on the show. Again, kind of like Hogan, kind of like Sean and them earlier in the show. They're in their own match. They're not clogging up other
That's
feuds
true. Yeah.
That involve younger guys. You know, they've been there, done that. WWF title matches. They've been there, done that.
Yeah, on that level, it's a very transitional show, like we've talked about. So Steve Austin had been told by his doctors at this point his neck could not handle the stress and the strain of wrestling any longer, and now there was no doubt this would be his last match. We didn't know that, but
no.
He knew, and The Rock kind of knew. Word of his impending retirement had yet to reach the fans. This made Austin very anxious during WrestleMania weekend. For someone who was already a caffeine junkie, he drank a little bit too much coffee in Seattle, and the night before the event went to the hospital in a panic attack. He was fine the next day and wrestled the match, but as shown on the Mania of WrestleMania movie, Austin, who was a nervous wreck heading into this match, with his career winding down, Austin would still play a vital on-air role And we'll talk about that. But throughout that whole movie that we mentioned earlier, Mania of WrestleMania, he was, you could see the stress that he was under and the way what he was feeling heading into what was going to be his last match now.
Yeah.
And amazingly enough, Scott, it's been his last match. You know, we're 11 years removed from this show.
Mm-hmm.
And he has not stepped in the ring again. And he's been on camera, been involved in fights and everything else, but never had another bell-to-bell match since this one here. So, final pay-per-view, 3-3 at the Rumble, 5-2 at WrestleMania, including 3 world title wins, 2-2 at SummerSlam, 2-3-1 at Survivor Series, 3-2-1 at King of the Ring, 17-15-1 at other events, for a surprising record of 32-27-3. That surprise you?
A little bit, but he had a lot of, you know, it's funny. I earlier in today, when I was looking at our review and I was watching, I was talking to Dr. G, who the biggest Austin fan I know, and I asked him. I said, take away the three. I said, 59 decisions. I told him, take away the 3 no decisions, which he remembered all 3 of them. What do you think his record was? He said 40-19. I'm like, wow, really? I said, no, 32-27. He goes, really? I said, well, in 97, you know, he didn't win every month, and you know, he had some crap matches, and I mean, he didn't win everything in 96,
right?
A lot of those earlier matches, and
yeah, those
earlier
ones, and then there's so much back and forth in that era.
Yeah, he only won. I mean, look at his record. If you take away the 17-15, and he's 15-12. I mean,
yeah.
Look, the 2 biggest shows, he's 7-4 at. At Mania.
And he made them count. He won 3 Rumbles. He won a King of the Ring, 4 tag titles, 2 Intercontinental titles, 6 world titles. So, I mean, he's had quite the run.
And, I mean, 3 of his 6 world titles at WrestleMania. Right. I mean, you can't argue that. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Right. Pretty, never really been done.
Pretty
so,
epic. Yeah.
Austin knew things were going to end for him the night before the show. Again, he was having problems at the gym, fell over at the hall of the hotel, went to the hospital. You know, Austin, obviously, after the match, we'll talk about that in a minute. So, he had 702 total matches in his career in the WWF. On TV, it was 140, 69, and 34 overall. So,
that's pretty good.
All right, so mega match, Scott. The story here is that Rock has never beaten Austin at Mania, and this really felt like the end of an era. Austin gets a huge pop, and it's kind of weird not knowing this was it for Austin, but knowing now, but not knowing at the time. Brawl immediately spills to the floor. Austin dominates, very focused. JR talks about his respect for Rock cashing in with acting. Doesn't think he sold out. Rock goes to the knee to swing some momentum. Rock's taunting and shit-talking is top-notch here. Rock does his usual terrible sharpshooter. Wears Austin's vest to mock him, but allows Austin to come back while he's prancing around on the floor with it. Austin hits a Rock bottom for the near fall. Rock then hits a stunner for a near fall. Rock gets one last crazy stunner sell in, flopping all over the place. But he kicks up. The crowd's really wrapped up to this match here. Austin survives the people's elbow and a Rock bottom, and you could feel Rock's desperation to get this win. Austin survives a second Rock bottom. And the finishers are kind of being killed off a bit here. More symbolism, what's coming for both these guys. They don't really give a shit now. Third Rock bottom finally finishes Austin, as he had been barely hanging on to the first two. And it kind of felt surreal when Austin lost here, because that's when you realize he must maybe done. Right? Because... Mm-hmm. He always beat The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really weird all of a sudden that he just lost. And it seemed like he had just come back, and Rock was going back to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So why would Austin lose this match? And that when you realize something's up. And I thought it was a great match. It felt like a greatest hits compilation of their best stuff. They go out with a bang. I thought it was tight. I thought it was crisp. But they didn't waste any time. I thought it was a ballsy effort that you forget about, considering how dinged up Austin is, taking all those stiff Rock bottoms. Austin lingers around and gets a nice send-off at the end. Where do you rank this among the 3 matches, Scott? And were you disappointed by it? Did you like it in the end? What were your overall thoughts? A fitting farewell for Austin?
I definitely put this number 2. I go 17, 19, 15. And I love, and what's sad is I love WrestleMania 15.
Yeah.
I know that match is very predictable, but that brawl is awesome. 17, well, like I said, and I put it in my comments, 15 was about work rate. Mm-hmm. 15 was about storyline. 17 was about work rate. And 19 was about legacy. And I was not disappointed whatsoever. But I can, and you know, you say it now, and I'm praying to the good Lord and on my father's soul. I seriously stood there, and you can ask Dr. G. I sat there 11 years ago and said, "This is it." You could tell, because everybody says, "Oh, I knew that 11 years ago." Duh. But you're just, you know, a lot of people say that just to say that. I seriously did say, because you could tell Rock was bending down. He was shooing Hebner off. I'm thinking
right.
something's going
on.
Something's going.
End.
Yeah, something's going on here.
Right.
But we'll get to that in a minute. No, I was not disappointed at all. This match was fantastic. And JR King finally snapped out of the shit streak he was on for the last couple matches. And they really
They were good here.
They really, you know, get put over the finality without really saying it.
And I think it's fitting when you look at our main event that it feels even more so like the end of an era transition past the torch to the new style of main event.
Yep. Because dare I say this, and not through no fault of their own, they were almost out of place to a certain extent. That it was a bit of a novelty, just like Hogan and Vince. Because with the main event we're about to talk about, and some other guys on the card throughout the show, that this is it. But you didn't feel that because when you're in the moment, while you're watching the match, you're like, oh, you're just two awesome guys, and
right.
Well, you know, Rock's going to go off, and you know, you did think Austin was going to win because you didn't know what was going on.
It
Rock
seemed
was not going to stick around.
That we knew. We knew Rock was not here long term. But Austin had just come back.
Right. And nobody knew anything about his, you know, what the scoop was. So I was legitimately stunned when he lost. And then as the minutes ticked by after, you felt the moment. And why? I don't think there was any question about that. It shook me. I don't want to say it shook me. I don't want to go that dramatic. But when I'm watching it today, even today, and I've watched this show like, you know, 9 times, every time I watch this match in that moment, I get a chill. Because this is it. The book is closed. That's it. There's nothing you could say. Because nothing past this moment can compare to what you saw the previous 5 years.
Right.
Absolutely not.
And again, this is why I believe this to be the end of the Attitude Era. Because it's your last Rock Austin WrestleMania match, your last Steve Austin match overall. Just about your last Rock match for a long time, outside of one or two. To me, it just feels like we're closing the book on an incredible era of wrestling. And the new chapter opens in our next match. So that's why it really felt to me like this was the end. This was it. And they go out with a bang as only they can. Very fitting they go out together since this thing really started with them feuding in late 97 is what really lit this candle. So I think it's very fitting that they're also here in their last match together. So they bookend the Attitude Era, Scott. It's been a really fun ride with Steve Austin. Talked about a lot of awesome matches, a lot of great moments, so many of them, really. Too many to count, too many to name. It's going to be kind of weird. It's always weird when these guys leave us to not talk about them anymore. And I guess we've kind of gotten used to it because he hasn't really been on a ton here in late 02. So we've been able to not talk about him anyway, but it's going to be weird knowing he's done. But he'll stick around now. He's an on-air character for at least the next year and then on and off from there. So we won't completely close the book on him and eulogize him. As you teased at the end of the match there, Rock kind of shooed Hebner away and leaned in and kind of almost hugged Austin, and you know, they said they loved each other and everything else, and really wrapped the moment, and you knew that they knew that this was it. So a great WrestleMania moment, extremely memorable, a really fun match, and a fitting end for both these guys. And like I said, it takes us beautifully to our main event.
Yeah. It's amazing as we've done these vaults, JR, going all the way back to, I mean, in essence, does it start at SummerSlam 97, Ground Zero, Bad Blood? Austin was already at that moment, and it's about at that time that Rock, you know, turns heel, joins the Nation, and begins the story. For those that have the network and are going to plan on keeping it and aren't pissing and moaning, watch the two, both of them. I watched them with the doctor over the weekend. The two WrestleMania rewinds, the 14 with Steve and Sean, and definitely 15, because it's amazing how true to life that match at WrestleMania 15 was. That two guys at their peak. And the pedestal to be the face of the company is very small, and it's very hard to balance two guys on it. So I very much recommend watching that WrestleMania Rewind on the network, the WrestleMania 15. I don't know if you've had a chance, JR, but it's fantastic. Because here's two guys that pretty much, JR, without them, we'd be doing, you know, Vintage Vault Super Brawl 15 or whatever, sold out or whatever, Lord only knows. They saved this place.
Yeah.
And gave us some great moments. Gave us some stinkers, but everybody's entitled to a stinker once in a while. Not often. So let me ask you this, and we'll move on to the main event. But if you had to give me right now, very quickly, your three favorite pay-per-view alone, your three favorite Austin matches and your three favorite Rock matches.
I hate you. Survivor's 96 for Austin, I guess WrestleMania 13 with Brett. Angle of SummerSlam. I don't know. This is really hard.
Okay. Rock for me is easier. Austin is tougher. Rock, for my three favorite Rock matches, him and Triple H at Backlash 2000, him and Triple H at Judgment Day 2000, and probably all from that year, and him and Benoit at Fully Loaded. Although Vengeance 02 is pretty damn good too.
Yep.
And for, I mean, for Austin, obviously, him and Triple H at No Way Out 01 is my favorite ever of his, but there's a crap load too. I mean, they're the faces of this run, and it's fitting. And it also, I also think, JR, that the placement of this match here was not an accident.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Right before our main event, you needed to, like, this is the transition from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Here to here. That was not an accident, in my opinion. Farewell, Stone Cold. I mean, we'll talk about him, obviously, but he'll be around, and we'll talk about in what capacity as we move forward. But the guy who saved this place, and Rock helped him keep it up. So there you go. All right. Now we transition from one era to the other. The end of one and the beginning of another.
The sweetest days I've found with you. Through the years I've met with you.
Damn you, Kenny.
Really young Jeezy.
What the hell is that? Jesus, Kenny. Drunken bastard. All right.
It's funny you talk about transitions because you were awful at them when it comes to this music.
It was not my fault. Fucking Snitsky. All right. And your boy had some unbelievable moments with both those guys.
Hmm.
They both had great chemistry.
True.
I think skits-wise, I think when it came to promos, I think he was better with Austin. Obviously, 01.
Yeah.
With the hat, you know, with all the stuff with Vince. I have to say, though, other than the match at SummerSlam 01, and I like the one at Unforgiven 01, I think he had better in-ring chemistry with Rock.
No. I don't think so.
I think the match at No Way Out 01 is incredibly unheralded.
Yeah, but it's not better than... It's not even close to SummerSlam, I don't think.
I think... I don't know. That's a good debate.
Yeah, not one we have time for here, so...
No, not at all. But your boy got a taste of both those guys. All right. Here we go. Main event. The WWE Championship on the line. The match with which this undercard needed to be good for.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get to this match?
Well, on the 3-6 SmackDown, Lesnar won a steel cage match against Paul Heyman to earn a pre-WrestleMania title shot against Kurt Angle. That match occurred the following week. Before the match, Angle switched places with his brother Eric, who was hiding under the ring. Similar to what Angle did to Undertaker during their title match at the 2000 Survivor Series, Lesnar wrestled Eric unaware that there was a switch. He dropped an F5 and went for the pin, but then was taken aback when he realized it wasn't Kurt he was wrestling. Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas distracted Lesnar, Eric and Kurt switched again, and Kurt rolled up Lesnar for the win. On 3:20, GM Stephanie McMahon told Angle that if he tried to get himself disqualified or there was any outside interference at WrestleMania, he would lose his title. During the weeks leading up to the show, it was revealed that Kurt Angle's neck was seriously deteriorating and required another major surgery. It was unknown if Angle would be able to make the event and drop the title to Brock. And despite the terrible news, Angle was defiant, did not want to miss the opportunity to main event Mania. Afraid of having one of his top stars seriously injured on the biggest show of the year, rumors were swirling that Vince was going to switch his plans. And the most popular rumor was that Angle would drop the belt to Brock on a quick SmackDown match, and Chris Benoit would turn heel and get the WrestleMania title shot against Brock Lesnar. When Lesnar defeated Heyman on the 3-6 SmackDown and earned that title match for the next week, many people assumed that Vince had decided to make the change. However, the match went down, Angle retained. It was clear that he got his way. He would be competing in Seattle. He gutted his way through this crazy match here and would go on for surgery on April 11th. He would choose to go with a less conventional surgery that cut his rehab from 1 year to 3 months, would be off TV until June. And for more insight into that mindset and severity of the situation, Scott, we reference you to, again, check out that Mania WrestleMania movie, because it's a lot of focus is on Kurt Angle's neck heading into that. Yeah. And when you watch that and know how dinged up he was, it makes us watching this match even crazier. Mm-hmm. This would be the only time in Kurt Angle's career that he wrestles a final match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, bummer.
So, pretty nuts.
Yeah.
when you consider everything. Yeah. I was actually at SmackDown, and I want to make sure I get the right one here. It was in Fairfield. I went with Mark Clare, and it was a shit show. I'm sorry, it was in Bridgeport, rather.
Bridgeport, yeah, I was about to say.
March 4th, it was the one where Brock pinned Heyman. And we got really heavily buzzed. Claire was tanked on the way.
Wow, what a shock.
My wife drove us. And so we had really good floor seats. And I think Adam and Jim came in. And
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're on the floor. And Claire's is bombed. He goes and we buy hot dogs. And he tips the concession lady like $15 or something. And then we're walking away and he drops the fucking hot dog on the ground. Then we go down, and I have a picture evidence of this, photographic evidence. He was smoking a butt on the floor of the fucking Harbor Yard Arena during SmackDown. It's just out of his mind. Early dose of Claire. And then
I've experienced that firsthand.
And we watched Mania together in my apartment. So, I was at that SmackDown with the Heyman match. So coming out of that, we just assumed the next week we were getting the title change. I mean, it seemed fairly evident when you factored in all of the rumors and whatnot. So, interesting show overall. So we head into this match again, changing the guard. Scott, feels like a new main event styles on the heels of the previous match. Kurt, a very serious injury, rumors that he may not make it to Mania. Attitude Era breaking down, falling apart across the board. Kurt Angle's crowning moment, finally in a Mania main event as champion. Brock has great presence here. Crowd is buzzing. Cole and Taz are locked in. Brock's ribs are taped up. Lots of grappling early with each man trying to gain an advantage. Kurt goes to suplexes, including a German into the turnbuckles. Kurt takes a while to finally slow Brock up, but he's able to do it. He focuses on the back. New style is evident with all the in-ring action, a blending of submissions and mat wrestling with suplex styles. Cole and Taz are fantastic. They're a perfect fit for this new era main event style here. Kurt tries to wear down Brock with a rare naked choke, but Brock powers out. Impressive to see Angle chucking Brock around with suplexes. Brock comes back with suplexes of his own. A lot of heavy blows. Kurt Angle's nuts taking some of the suplexes he's taken with his neck. Kurt goes to the Angle lock into a single crab to work the ankle and leg. Angle gets an awesome release German with Brock taking a 180 sell onto his face. Super close near fall on an F5, and Angle becomes the first man to kick out of it. Battle over Angle with Brock wriggling free and powering out. Brock hits a second F5 but doesn't cover and instead goes up for the mythical shooting star press that had always been rumored that he could hit. If you remember back in his days in OVW, they always talked about how he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
A huge buzz as he climbs, but then you kind of realize Kurt's a little bit far away, and he whiffs. Crashes to the mat, smashes his head against the mat. Do you think it was cool for him to do this as a WrestleMania moment, or was it stupid to try it in such a big spot?
It was absolutely stupid.
Yeah, really not.
He is a dope. There was no need for that. And even he's sitting on the ground right next to the ropes. You're telling me you couldn't tell? Oh man, I'd love to do this, but I might have to pull him in a couple.
Well,
minutes.
Then he
you're
gets
telling
to the,
me he couldn't.
And then he gets to the top, and it's too late. I mean, at that point, he's probably looking like, oh fuck.
Jesus All right. Christ. Well, let's hope I just don't die.
So, and immediately you know Angle's too far watching it. The botch was too bad to even cover up. Cole and Taz basically admit that he missed it. Brock is loopy. He hits an F5 for a very anticlimactic win. It's a fantastic match. I love this match. Just a notch off for that finish. Brock is all woozy, and it kind of messes up the celebration at the end because he's really out on his feet. And the new era officially underway. So, again, this is basically a 4.5, 4.75 match for me. One of my favorite WrestleMania main events of all time. I thought it really established Brock as a real player here. I thought Angle did a phenomenal job being as injured as he did. He went in there and made this guy and put him over. Mm-hmm. And just a great main event to cap off a great card.
Yeah, I mean, he was able to shake Kurt's hand, although at a moment, Brock looks at him and goes, "Who are you again?" Blood's pouring out his nose. And yeah, that was pretty dumb. Other than that, I love the back and forth that they had.
Right.
Kurt is just such a ring general. He really is. He knows his shit. And it was sad, you know, that he was going to have to be gone for a while. And
yep.
That we kind of knew about, right? That was not.
Yeah.
Was
yeah. Yeah. Because all the rumors were there that he was going to lose.
Yeah.
So that was not a secret at all. And I mean, it was scary thinking he may be gone for a year. Because we just lost all these other guys for a freaking year. Now we're going to lose him for a year.
I know.
So as scared as you were for him to have this experimental surgery, on the flip side, you were kind of relieved a little bit that, you know, or hopeful that he'd be back in 3 months without problems.
Let me ask you this. If they did Brock and Benoit, and Brock was going to retain, so this wouldn't have been the main event, I don't think, what would you have put last?
Probably Hogan Vince.
See, I'd have put Rock and Steve.
Or Rock and Steve, yeah. One of those two. You're not going to close with Brock Benoit.
No, not if Brock was going to retain. And I certainly would not have ended with Booker T and Duncan. No.
It would have been an easy switch. You just drop the tag match and make it a straight Guerrero's team angle match if you had to.
Yeah.
It definitely would have lost some luster on this card. As cool as Brock Benoit would have been and Benoit going heel, I think it definitely would have hurt this card overall to have Brock already headed in as champion. I thought him winning made the moment.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And, I think Rock Steve last would have probably not had his, because then you're like, all right, now it's over. And,
right.
And at
Rock
least,
wins.
Yeah.
That's why they made it one with Hogan. And with Hogan, but anyway.
That didn't happen. So
what are your thoughts on the show as a whole, Scott? Where does it rank for you? Rewatching it recently, talking about it now. Still number 2 to 17?
Because
to me, the only negative was really Hunter Booker, and then I guess the bitch you can have is the concert and the Miller Lite shit bogged it a little bit here and there. But I feel like 17 had a few more dogs. Like, you had China Ivory, you had that APA match.
But that's it, though. Yeah. I mean, Jericho Regal.
I guess.
Eddie Test is good. Yeah. Vince Shane.
Well, you
TLC
said you liked
2.
Vince Hogan better, right? Yeah, yes. I guess TLC 2 is a big swing on that card. I think it's closer than people may imagine, though. I don't think there's that big of a gap between these two. Now, granted, I'm not the biggest Rock Austin 17 fan. I like this one almost as much. So,
well, I know you hate the ending,
and I like the look here better.
The ending
too.
Is hateable. Yeah,
I like the look here better. I mean, 17 has Heyman, which is great. Colin Taz are very good here.
Oh, that's tough. I love Safeco's look, but the massive look of the Astrodome.
Yeah, Safeco with the sun
behold.
Setting and the light. Oh, God, it looks at the blue tint to everything.
I do like the blue tint, you're right. But there's just something about the size of the Astrodome that's just ridiculous.
It's all about size to you, Chris Golo. That's what you're along so well.
Same thing with Silverdome at 3 for me. But
so easy A plus for this? For
oh, easy A.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. 19, 3,
so easy
17,
you call it Emma Stone?
19.
So easy you call it Emma Stone?
Emma Stone. 3, 17, 19, No Way Out 01. 19 goes in that cachet of shows that I could put on anytime. It's like Billy Joel for me. I could put on Billy Joel anytime. I could put on WrestleMania 19 anytime.
All right, be careful. We're going to have Steve Rogers singing on here. but that was definitely, definitely to me a top 2 mania of all time.
Yeah.
Still holds up, but it's amazing when you consider the rest of 03 as we move through it. It seems so out of place in that year. And it felt like something that maybe should have happened a year earlier. But definitely a good bounce back from 18. Puts us back on the good mania track here. And, an awesome show. The end of an Attitude Era is upon us, Scott. I think we should start to wrap because we're a little tight on time. But I want to call out quick. I got some really nice feedback from Michael Cook, a big fan of the show. Maybe wants to get involved, too, at PlaceTimination.com. Michael, we read your feedback. It's awesome. I think we're just running a little bit out of time here to read it on air. So what I can do is... If you shoot me a message here on with your Facebook link, we can go ahead and add you to the live chat so we can throw it in there too and talk about it. So thank you for reaching out. And again, it's just a lot of feedback. I don't think we'll
And he was the one that was at the show.
Yes, he was there live. Okay. And it looks like he was at Raw the next night too. So a lot of cool feedback. And
that was
really
Tacoma.
Nice, so. Yeah, so thank you, Michael. Really appreciate that. So, Scott, we'll be back Wednesday night. We'll talk more about this then, but so we're going to have a little schedule shifting around going forward here. Going to spread out our vaults a little bit because we're trying to add some different stuff into the mix. And, you know, we know you guys like those live Raw watches. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to add a couple more into the mix for different stuff. So this Wednesday, we're going to have Aaron George. We're going to have Jason Greenhouse and Dr. G with us. And we're going to start watching all the SmackDowns in order. So we're going to start with the August 26th edition, 1999, the initial run. We're not going to do the pilot. We're going to start with the show proper. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be doing the SmackDown live rewatch right here Wednesday night. Next Monday, we have... What do we have, Scott, next Monday?
Next Monday is Labor Day.
Yeah, we're doing the Raw rewatch next Monday.
Yeah, that's what I thought we were doing.
There. So we have Roger, Willie, and... maybe Chad. If not, we should probably give a shout out to Chad. Him and his wife had a lovely baby boy today.
Yes,
so came through healthy and looking good. So congratulations there.
Yep.
So we'll see. If he's not there, maybe we'll wrangle up Duncan or one of the other guys to show up for that. That'll be the, where are we at for that? 315
and 322. 315 and 322. We're getting right around the corner to WrestleMania 9.
So. And then KK and main event next Wednesday. So,
yes.
All right. So that's it. Hope you enjoyed WrestleMania 19. It was a great show to talk about. Always fun to revisit. Until a Wednesday night, we bid you adieu. We'll talk to you from SmackDown. And that's it. We're out of here.
I wasn't going to sing Purple Rain.
I want you to sing Electric Company with an erection, with purple tights on, with a sledgehammer.
Morgan Freeman was on Electric Company.
Was it really?
Yeah.
It was a long time ago that Scott Criscolo met Paul Levesque.
Paul Levesque UA.
Wendy Williams say I stay dusted. Maybe I should, because these rappers will have your phone tapped like Savion Glove. And on the West, yo, police corrupt some of bloods. But these Teflons are loaded, exploding some mugs. I'm like Furious and Boys in the Hood. But at the drive-thru, I ain't running, I'm dumping. Crazy like a pyro and loped up. Know how Nas do. I'm calling Hitchman and Conception to organize a black truce. Then we party hard, party with Nas, since there ain't no more Mardi Gras. And Bush won't apologize. I got gangster hoes, Kobe Bryant scared to sodomize. And 45s for them suckers y'all idolize. Y'all yelling my name, but y'all soon dying. Trying to portray real, but they be lying. Cause they want the real niggas to die so they get gay. But never that, this ain't never